back, folks, and we back with a bang. It's the State of Combat podcast with Brian Campbell on CBS Sports. And we're back with the box, folks. All box AO, all the time. Stacked, backed, jacked with another lethal dose of that performance-enhancing audio. The Brian Campbell, in fact, the voice that you hear. And you know I'm going to tag in my Broham Big Red in a mere amount of seconds, Amir Mansour, a mere amount of seconds, Amir Khan, 147. I'm going to be back with this guy, Boogs, in a second here, but you know we have a loaded show coming at you. Wow, wow, it is Spence Garcia pay-per-view fight week. Time to cash those checks, time to get fired up.
Make that money, player.
Yeah!
Right.
Right. The guy's back too. Look, I couldn't hold this man back anymore. He might have to make a few appearances on this show. The great Richard Dwyer. All the mayhem you can expect from this show back in your life. Firing you up for Spence Garcia on Fox pay-per-view. Interviews with the great two-time, two-division champion Paul Malignaggi to talk about his new bare-knuckle career rolling out here. Wow. Wow. Big news there. We're also going to chat with Irish featherweight rising star in the top ranked stable, Michael McConlin, who of course headlines the St. Patrick's Day card. Wow. On ESPN Plus from the Garden. 3 years in a row for that feller. I'm going to find out what's going on in the life of Mick. You better believe that. All the Do You Care weekend preview, all the news, all the crap in between. I believe the sun is setting on this show's future. No, this show is back with a bang. Left, right, good night. Hey, if you do like this show, though, I know you don't like when I go too long on that. You know what to do.
If you see something, say something.
Wow, hey, head on over to Apple Podcasts, or we're now on Spotify. If that's a service you have, get on there. Hit us up with that five-star review. I don't know. Tell us what you like about the show. Tell us how good we are doing at moving this movement that you care about, fans. Load Watch 2019 that has taken over the NBA. We got Chris Mannix tweeting about it this week. Wow. Get out there. Leave your reviews. Get fired up. Are you ready for the show, folks? Are you ready?
I was born ready.
Yes. Born ready. Born ready, Big Red. Speaking of Red Man, not Wu-Tang, I'm talking about my co-host. He's the great New Yorker himself and also a New York Times bestseller. You may have seen him on some Filipino soap operas that you can still find on YouTube. Bakugong, yeah, in the house. Here he is, the one and only, the great, the protector of all things cruiserweights, Rafe Bartholomew.
Let me lick you up. Let me lick you down. Cruiserweight.
Let me lick you
on. Some old man fights.
Boy, let me lick you down.
Oh, baby. Ray Boogs, West Coast. It's like, if it's 3 a.m., you must be lonely. It's dark where you're at. How you doing, Broham? Monday morning, get fired up.
I was fired up, Brian, until I heard you try and sort of say that Redman was in the Wu-Tang Clan. No, no. Yeah. Redman is from New Jersey. He's from Newark. He's not from Staten Island.
Got outed
movies
there.
Movies with Method Man. Yes, How High Happened.
Wow.
Yes, they had the whole Blackout album. I mean, who can hate on Red and Meth together, but he was never.
Wow. Did I really just do that?
Standing.
And the thing is, I obviously know that I'm old. I come from that era. Wow. In real time.
There is a dark side. You're Mr. Reggie Noble over here.
Wow. In real time, I just dropped that, which made me sound so lame. I was a big third base fan though, so maybe that tells you something. All right.
You do. I mean, look, when I learned that Prime Minister Pete Nice of third base was a elite high school basketball player who played on a New York State, in these New York State Empire State Olympic Games with Dwayne Pearl Washington on the same team.
Wow.
He was on the same selection. That's crazy.
That is pretty crazy. You know what's also pretty crazy is last week I vowed that we would hold back on Dwyer because it was a drug that I had and it was a drug that was taking over my life. But Rafe, the hardcores spoke up. The hardcores, these are not regular fans. The hardcores, like, banded together.
You are the boxing hardcore. You're not regular fans.
I mean, and they said, we need more Dwyer on this damn show. They even went as far as, what's this HBO documentary that Dwyer's showing up on his crime blog? What is happening here?
That was such a moment for the Dwyer hive. Richard Dwyer showing up used in a clip on this documentary about Adnan Shed, the guy who was in prison for the first season of Serial, the podcast. I remember listening to it way back then. Don't remember all of the details now. Don't have HBO, so I can't really tell you what the documentary is like, but I have seen the clips on Twitter, and they have Dwyer there. He's the voice of the internet crime fan, the same way he is the voice of the internet boxing fan. And Brian, I don't want to toot our own horn too much. I'm not being paid $7 million a year to sit here and give notes on HBO documentaries. I'm not a producer like that.
Wow.
But Brian.
Subtweet.
What? I don't know what you're talking about. But Brian, what I do know is that it takes a little bit of time to produce a documentary, a little bit of time. You got to finish that a couple weeks ahead of time, I think. But I think they found Dwyer through us. They found him through us.
Wow. First they found the loads. Then they found the mess. Then they found Dwyer. I think first you get the power. Then you get the what? Is that another Wu-Tang refugee?
Then
no,
you
it's
get
not.
The loads.
Who was that? That was
Scarface.
Scarface. Yes. Wow. Woke me up. Woke me up, please, Rafe.
You're in the wrong part of the ring, Holmes. You're too close to the ropes.
Exactly. Well, speaking of the ropes, shout out to us, right? Back in the day, Grantland. Yes. Hey.
Right. Now that was some production worthy of $7 million a year, bro.
Yes. Yes. All right. We got a lot to talk about. I do want to woke you all up to the fact that I did get back. Look, I'm putting the needle in just the tip of the needle, just for a second, just to see how it feels. I got me a little Dwyer this morning, hearing his thoughts on Garcia Spence this week. I'm not going to overdo it. I'm not going to play you the sound drops, but Dwyer does say this, the great Richard Dwyer. He says the odds makers got it wrong. It should be Mikey Garcia who's the favorite heading into this weekend's welterweight showdown inside Jerry World. Wow, Rafe. Wow. Wow.
Mikey is a historic fighter, according to Dwyer, and I don't think he's wrong. I mean, Mikey could lose this fight and still be a historic fighter because Errol Spence might be a bigger and also historic fighter. That's the question. That's what we're going to watch on Saturday for.
Well, he has looked at more men than I have.
I've looked at a lot of guys.
I mean, how many, if you had a guess, how many would you say he's looked at?
Many guys.
All right. The great Richard Dwyer. Shout out. Hey, check out his, peep his hit. What's that Dwyer catchphrase he always says?
DwyerVIP.com?
No, that's a free site. I was going to say, revisit his collaboration, Rafe, okay? We're not here to clown Mr. Dwyer. We're here to celebrate. Hey, go check out his work on YouTube. San Francisco's own Richard Dwyer is fantastic.
It's in my favorites folder.
I think that's magic.
Yes, all right, Richard Dwyer. Enough of that. It's time to get into the show, Rafe. I mentioned we got Pauly, we got Mick Conlon, we got Rafe Boogs looking back at the weekend that was in the state of boxing.
Oh, and what a weekend, Brian.
A weekend it was. Wow. Hey, you shouted me out to a sound I should have on my soundboard of Sean Porter from a service I was a part of. It was the FBC face-to-face Porter Ugas. That was the headlining fight this weekend. How did I miss this Sean gem?
It ain't, and it won't, and you not, and you ain't.
Hey, Sean, your Dennis Ugas almost was. He almost was, Broham.
He was, and he did, and he's something, and he was.
And he almost is. In the end, Sean Porter defends his WBC welterweight championship at the House of Box, at the Den of Savagery, at the Cathedral of War.
I don't know, Brian, the Dignity Sports Health Cone of Shame or whatever it's called, that thing, that reputation is getting sullied by this recent slate. I mean, PBC is sending all the slop there, man. Oh. Just keep that stuff in Barclays. You know, this is our special place out here on the West Coast.
I hear you on that one. In the end, Sean hangs on against tough Cuban or Dennis Ugas. Split decision victory. Them cards, 117-111 in favor of Ugas. But correct? Correct?
Yes.
And then it was what, a 16-12 and a 15-13
13.
For Sean Porter. Up front, I scored at 115, 113 for your Dennis Ugas. People were ripping this fight afterwards. Here's what I'll say about it. I thought it was an entertaining fight. I thought tactically it was very entertaining because Porter looked good early. Ugas got him out of his game. Ugas was landing the harder, cleaner, more telling blows and made Porter confused, made him have to fight a different fight. If we're just going to go the story of the fight, Max Kellerman, Ugas won that. He also won it on my card. But what becomes a rough stereotype against Cuban fighters, Rafe, tell me if I'm wrong here, Ugas left the back door open. He did not do enough down the stretch to leave no doubt. This was Lara against Canelo in a way. Ugas had the better craft in this fight. But in the end, if judges are going to prefer Sean coming forward and being busier in the later rounds, I can't hate on that. I know Ray Boom Boom Mancini's getting all up in them Fox DMs saying this was a robbery. This was this was that. It's not a robbery. It was another very skilled Cuban fighter looking really good for six or seven rounds, but leaving that back door open. Rafe, your thoughts?
Yes, I think I basically saw the fight the same way as you. I was not scoring at home, but I seemed like I favored the Cuban in this one. And Ugas just looked like he did better work, but in the way that we've come to expect from these Cuban fighters who I don't know if it comes from this feeling of superiority that they have in their own technique, in their own style, and that they will never make a concession to the way other people see the sport, the way even judges see the sport, and that they're looking at it like, I'm doing this the right way. I'm winning this fight with my style, and you can't really prove me wrong. I mean, these guys are never totally wrong when they say that. They also don't get wins that they probably could get if they just stepped on it a little bit, if they put in something to wrap a bow around it, if they closed rounds, if they did any of those little tricks that fighters do to edge fights. These aren't guys who are active enough to knock out their high-level opponents. We've seen that with Lara. We've seen that with Ugas. So when they're outboxing guys, you need to make some kind of statement on top of just looking like the sharper guy in the ring. It's too bad because we've seen these guys, they're really talented and they fall short so often.
I'm with you on that.
It was an effective robbery. It's still a robbery! It's a robbery!
No, Teddy, it's not a robbery. Porter did push the pace. Yes, here's the thing, there were so many close rounds. That's the thing in the end. And I do, shout out to our guy. I do like his work on Fox as the unofficial, scorer. Our man, Marcos Vegas from Fight Hub
Fight
TV.
Fight Hub, baby!
Because I don't love Chris Myers in that play-by-play role. And Myers sort of like challenged Marcos a few times on air, and I thought Marcos handled it well. I really agreed with Marcos, had the same score as I did, so obviously I'm going to agree with him, but I agree with the way he broke it down. It was like, you know, there were a lot of close rounds that it's what you prefer. Porter's activity against Ugas's cleaner counter shots. In the end, I think it was a step back for Porter. It was a survive in advance because we all know the big, business available to him in the second half of 2019, which is possibly fights against, name them, right? Name them. Spence, Garcia, Pacquiao, Thurman.
Terrence Crawford?
Well, there was some talk afterwards. And let's not forget what happened a couple months ago, right? Didn't we hear, Top Rank came out and reported that they offered $3 million to PBC and Al Haymon for Porter to face Crawford? Maybe that's more likely than we realize. Either way, SP Sean Porter, the Showtime guy, kept himself in play for a big fight this year, whether you enjoyed his performance or not. I didn't love all of the comments by Sean afterwards when he said, we could have attacked this guy more, but my dad thought I was doing great outboxing him. Well, you just barely, by the skin of your teeth, pulled this off. So I would have liked a much more demonstrative performance. I would have liked Sean stepping on the gas more. But I think what Sean really realized is when he stepped on the gas, Ugas was catching him coming in with the cleaner shots. He had the better craft on this night, Rafe. So Porter gambled that the judges would reward him, got the benefit of the doubt. Yes, the money fighters, the PBC fighters tend to get that. So does Canelo, by the way. This is box. It's a broken system. But I just didn't love the overall statement Sean Porter made in this. He survived and advanced.
Yeah, Brian, what do you think is going on with Sean Porter? Because we've seen him now in the last couple of fights. I think you're right. Against Ugas, it didn't seem like when he tried to when Porter tried to come forward a few times and do his, the old Sean Porter act, the sort of more mauling style, the chest to chest fighting, Ugas dealt with that a lot better than I think a lot of us expected him to. But it also, do you think that Sean Porter is sort of going through some kind of boxing identity crisis in there? Do you think that him and his father have started to listen to the critics who just don't like the style, who don't like how ugly Sean Porter and fights used to be, how rough they were? Adrian Broner clowning him over the years about being a football player and not a boxer. That whole aggressive, athletic wrestling hump with fists. If that can be a style, that versus Jeff Horn style, we gotta have it. We gotta see that someday. Do you think they started listening to that and said, you know what? We want to show we can also box from the outside, or is it just these last two matchups? I don't know. Overall, I don't think it's the best thing for Porter to do.
No, I think part of it is the idea of let's mix in more craft because we can sustain our career for longer rather than just being this bulldog who gets cut.
That's true.
He's got some serious scar tissue above his right eye from some of these cuts that he's been getting. Against the Danny Garcia, you can do that. Danny Garcia doesn't have elite lateral quickness. You can expose him, and they did. They fought a brilliant fight. But I really think after, let's say, round three, first three rounds, I thought Sean was doing a great job mixing in the old pressure style, like when he broke Berto's backbone, with sort of this stop-start rhythm method boxing pressure style. But Ugas was long and he was smart and he was technical, and he took that away from him. So there's always inevitably going to be an identity crisis for Sean Porter, Rafe, when you consider he's a tweener in the end. He's a Shane Mosley. What do I mean by that? He's a good, he's a really good boxer, but not great enough to outbox elites. And he's a really good mauler, but doesn't hit hard enough to out brawl elites. So in certain matchups, he can bring out either side to win against BB plus guys. But against the very elite, Sean Porter's setting himself up to always be a bridesmaid and always lose. And that's just what it is. He's a tweener, Rafe. Am I right or am I wrong here?
So no, that makes sense. That makes sense.
He's going to explore either side. But in the end, he's always going to lose to Thurman. He's always going to lose to Spence. He's always going to lose to maybe even Pacquiao.
Yeah, it's possible. I see what that's probably. I mean, those are fighters who are kind of better than him or look better than him. The good thing is the way he competes, he makes good fights out of all of them, because you have to beat Sean Porter. He's not going to, he's not going to just lay an egg for you.
He will get in that thing.
He will try. I wanted to ask, let me throw a little, what does it look like at you? I'm just hipstering myself out here. But I started to think, listening to Sean Porter mention Terrence Crawford's name and say, look, he's obviously on the other side of the street politically, but he's being overlooked by a lot of my fellow PBC welterweights who don't even say, pretend Crawford exists, blah, 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 blah. Got me thinking, what does it look like if we get that cross the street fight, if they cross the streams a little bit, not the main one everyone wants to see, which would be Crawford Spence or Crawford Garcia, but if they do Crawford Porter, I kind of think Sean Porter can give Crawford an interesting problem to solve. Like if he just goes the full on mall act, because Porter, didn't he fight early in his career at 154?
Yeah, I believe he was like a middleweight as an amateur too. I mean, he's always...
Go in there and just do the football thing to Terrence Crawford and see if that long, wiry guy, see how he figures that out.
It's probably the perfect fight in every category. Business-wise, criticism-wise, to accomplish certain things. Look, until Crawford eventually faces the best of the PBC welterweights, which we think is Spence, and it's probably going to have to be some kind of Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather build and take more years to get there. Until then, there's always going to be part of you that says, I can't anoint TC Bud as my P4P king because we haven't seen him against the best. So if Al was willing to let Porter go, knowing this is Porter's ceiling, here's what I mean by that. Politically, he's a B-side against these other elites like Thurman and Spence, but he may never get to the Super Bowl at PBC. He may never get to the biggest and best, the end of the bracket. He may never get to the end game because he's not as elite as these other guys. So let him go over there, let him cash in, and let him allow for Bud a chance to really prove himself against an elite, against a guy who's a little bit more crude, because look, Porter cannot box. Bud. We know that. And he's going to know that. So you're right. He's got to do the crazy man mentality. Come in there with the elbows. Come in there with the head. And it will allow us to really see Bud against a quasi-elite guy. It'll give Bud more, you know, standing and more of a backbone on his resume for us to be allowed to call him the pound for pound king if we so believe. It gives Porter a cash out at his highest level he can get to, because look, I know you're going to say, well, BC, didn't Porter push Thurman? Did he lose 15-13? Yes, but he exposed the hole in Keith Thurman that we talked about a few weeks ago. That
hole was that?
Which, that's disgusting. Wow.
Danny has a stick.
Yeah, this is Danny's night. No, it's not. Get that stick out of here. My point on that is Thurman will allow that. If he believes he's got you on the cards, he's not that guy that we thought he was. He's not that one time that's going to go out there and finish you. He'll allow that. So he allowed Porter to basically reach his ceiling. And I don't think Porter's going to beat any of these elites on the PBC side. I don't even know if he can get a fight against them. He seems to be the odd man out. Because if Thurman fights Pacquiao and Spence beats Garcia and then fights Danny Garcia, Porter will be the odd man out this year. So it's probably smart that he speaks up and keeps pushing that narrative of, hey, didn't Top Rank already make me an offer? Let's do this on ESPN pay-per-view. All right? But in the end, it's tough. He's a tweener. That's why Shane Mosley is a great Hall of Famer, but he was also a tweener, Rafe. Certain guys he could beat, but he was never going to beat those super, super elites.
At least he beat Oscar.
Twice, although he got that second time.
Yeah. Chew on that, BC.
How dare you? Porter, by the way, almost ruined this whole night when he missed weight the first time and had 2 hours to cut like 2 pounds. Came in under the 47 limit to make it, but had to not only strip down to his nards, Rafe, they had to cut his hair for him to make it, and then the towel slipped, and we got a little Showtime dong action, and this all coincided with the comeback of the Ultimate Sack headline. Coincidence or not, Rafe?
Sorry. On the conspiracy. I smell what you're cooking over there, BC, and it smells like an Ultimate Sack sandwich.
Wow. The former sponsor is back. The Ultimate Sack headband is back. Wait, James Bagg Jr., I gotta call you out. You're too deep into UFC these days on your timeline. You gotta get back into the sack, man.
Which one did Sean Porter recommend to us on the interview he did
like
on the show?
Hairy,
he's like, you gotta get the fluffy purple sack.
Yeah. Well, he had it in that situation, Rafe. Wow, gross.
I'm pro boner.
Aren't we all, Keith? Aren't we all? Did you see that the infighting on the Fox desk between Keith Thurman and Ray Boom Boom Mancini? Did you see that at all?
No, I did see the interview between Keith Thurman and Sean Porter when they had the split screen. They're both smiling, and it was a true tug of war of love between two champions who shared the ring together.
Wow.
It was like a tug and war of kindness. Every time I was kind, she would be more kind, then I'd be more kind, then she would be more kind.
Eventually, if you keep tugging and being kind.
Yeah, I like to see him get 30 to 35 minutes. I mean, he's in his early 20s. He's showing up. We're just getting a taste of him. I'm like, you know, I'm tired of getting a taste of him. I want the whole load.
You will. If you keep doing that, you will.
He pumps it.
Yes, he did pumps it more than once. Thank you, Dwyer. What I'm saying is, Boom Boom did like a poor man's Teddy Atlas. You know, as I mentioned earlier, it came out, said, this is a robbery. Then he called out Sean to his face. And then he was basically like, and by the way, that 12th round knockdown should have been a knockdown. And then Thurman's like, Ray, look at the video. He slipped. And then there was sort of a back and forth that ended with Keith going, come on, Ray, come on. I thought that was all a little bit interesting. Did you think that 12th round should have been a knockdown, even though Porter fell when their feet never collided, yet he did seem to block that punch by Ugas? Conspiracy theorists are telling you Ugas should have won the fight on that punch.
That is a big swing, right? I mean, to lose that point is a big deal to Ugas. I think a lot of referees probably would call that a knockdown, and they would have an argument to say so, right? Because, obviously Ugas threw a punch. It didn't land cleanly. It landed near the back of Porter's head and was partially blocked. And then while moving backwards, Porter's back foot slipped, you know, basically he just lost his footing. His back foot slipped out and he went down to a knee. Now, Ugas touched him, right? That whatever force that punch arrived with probably had some effect on Porter's balance. So you could say, there was contact. And then as a result, or partially as a result, Porter went down. However, I don't know that I really want to knock Jack Reese for not calling it a knockdown, because he wasn't hurt. It wasn't the punch didn't land cleanly. The punch probably, while you can't rule it out being a cause of the knockdown, did not appear to be the primary cause of Porter taking a knee.
I think you would have had more controversy than you have now if that would have been a knockdown. Yeah, it would have been trouble. So in the end. And I don't mean to be harsh on Sean Porter, by the way, in this whole, well, he's a quasi-elite, but he's not a real elite.
That's too harsh.
It is the hard truth, but obviously Sean Porter is a great guy, one of the better people in this community, and I would let him do many things.
Folks, that's the kind of guy you want marrying your daughter.
Wow, Dwyer, that was Dwyer, right?
It's Dwyer.
Yes, week of the fight. All right, my point is, though, which I said, I think Ugas ultimately exposed that Porter's a quasi-elite, but not a real elite, and he sort of needed to backdoor and coast to that split decision win. So, Rafe, what about Ugas? Certainly a tough out, not a division killer.
What about it, man?
But a tough out. What would he be able to do then against the real elites, against the Thurmans, the Spences? How would they make it so he couldn't push him to a split decision? I mean, do you think he can get back to this level, or is he sort of going to be an Arislandi Lara where it's like, yeah, you can beat these B guys and these C guys, but what are you going to do against the best if you're not going
to
throw?
I would say that Ugas could still rise to the level of an Arislandi Lara. I mean, Lara held titles at 154 for a long time and has fought at the truly highest level of the sport. I kind of think that Lara is the sharper, better version of that, or the sharper, better fighter between him and Ugas. But Ugas, I don't think that he's going to lose anything over the, in terms of a step or, you know, he's going to become worse in whatever, you know, his next few fights. I don't know if he's going to get another shot. I guess it's good. Of course, it's good to be at welterweight in PBC because there are so many good fights to make there and chances to win titles. And he's got to be considered right there on the cusp of the next time there's somebody needs an opponent and it's not going to be a big fight. Ugas has got to be on the short list for that, right? He's one of the better guys. And I think that he looks pretty good in all those fights. He's overall, he would belong in the ring with any of the elite guys. Might look, he'll slow every fight down, make it a little bit boring, and then lose it is unfortunately how I see all of those things happening.
He's a spoiler in the end, but very, very good performance by him. And again, I don't get the people that are saying this fight sucked. This fight was compelling. It was a chess match. It had moments. There was a couple moments where they exchanged too. I don't get boxing Twitter lately. I know it's a savage, very dark and down group because we deal with a sport that just beats on us, right? I mean, that's the truth, right? We rarely get exactly what we want and deserve. But I feel lately like boxing Twitter is just like, if it's not a full on action fight, it's like, oh, that fight sucked. What a waste of time. And it's not just like the curmudgeons and the trolls. It's like journalists too. I thought it was an entertaining fight and it was on 9:30 PM on Fox on a Saturday night. I was down with it.
Yeah. I didn't think it was as bad as some of the criticism of it. I don't know. Any fight that doesn't have action, people are going to crap on. Any fight that, even when they know better, it's just an easy thing to say. I don't exactly know why it happens all the time. It's so predictable. Even this was not a Miguel Vasquez fight.
Yes.
And they were doing some interesting things tactically. It was not, there was tension throughout, but how do you explain it? People are crazy. I give up trying to understand the world, man. It's all burning down.
Everyone's shitting themselves, right? And I'm just getting started.
We're just getting started here, Rafe. Let's speed through some things. On that co-main event, Effie Ajagba, I'm sorry, not the co-main event, the opener on Fox on Saturday night, that large heavyweight, Effie Ajagba, KO2 Amir Mansour, when the veteran mid-40s ex-convict Mansour could take no more, and you and I saw that coming because we did see that Filip Ergović fight. The only weird thing here is Mansour quit on his stool after, I think, two rounds or three rounds, but he had been dropped a bunch of times on stiff jabs. Did you see when Mansour got lit up right before the fight stopped, and then he did that war cry and screamed? And then came with a two-punch combo and ate another stiff-ass jab to the face. That was entertaining. Look, in the end, this was a mismatch because of the height difference, because of the wash difference. But you got to give it up for Ajogba, Rafe. I'm not ready to throw him in there against Anthony Joshua, but what I'm telling you is the guy looks good. I mean, this guy looks good. This guy looks like he's a project, but a good-ass project. You feeling what I'm feeling about this guy?
Oh, yeah, it moved, Brian. It moved. Yeah, I like him. Who the hell knows at this point? But yes, I like what I see. And he's got a great viral moment already with Curtis Harper last year. Just keep the train moving. Keep the man active and build him up. It's the heavyweight division. People like to see knockouts. It seems like he's going to deliver it at that level of fight. And then when it's time to step him up, let's see what happens.
He seems to hit pretty hard too.
That guy hits like a train and every single punch is like a train.
So get on board Choo Choo while this lasts. Could he be a long-term title opponent for somebody like a Wilder? That'd be a fun-ass fight if we can get there.
Of course he could. Why not? Why couldn't he be? That's where he wants to take his career and where the people shepherding it think it could possibly go. It's, you know, heavyweights get exposed all of a sudden at certain, you know, we've got David Price. We've got guys who look good and then all of a sudden they fight someone who actually hits back and it's a totally different story. But for now, why not believe? We've got a lot of these guys entering the division that are going to keep it an exciting and fun division for a while. You got Ajogba, Ergovic, Nathan Gorman, Daniel Dubois, Usyk, Gassiev, if he comes up to heavy. I mean, they all could end up in that mix.
I'm agreed with you on that. Hey, boxing is a sad sport in many ways. There was a sad outcome on Saturday night. Did you see this? So Robert Guerrero is in the, you know, former of Raw Dog fame. Yes, you got the Raw Dog. He got the Raw Dog. He fought. He continued his comeback on Saturday night against some guy you never heard of. But did you see how this played out, Rafe? You know how PBC a lot of times has the post-main event fights when there's nobody left? And, of course, you and I experienced this in 2014 at the Night of Champions card in Temecula when the cameras stopped rolling and we saw Boobs Brazil send a dude to hell and then the house lights turned out while the guy was still on his back. Steve Kim, who of ESPN, who was covering the fight, did sort of a panoramic video after the Fox card went off the air. Robert Guerrero came out for his, which turned into be a knockout, and there was legitimately 7 people in the crowd, Rafe. And this was already a bad night for the StubHub Center, Dignity Health Sports Park. Rafe, there were 7 people in the crowd. So I got to say a couple things here.
Yeah, it looked like the last night of HBO boxing in there. Oh!
God, I mean, Rafe, it was... It's already, like, it's inevitable that Guerrero would retire and come back, and that's fine, and it's fine that he's knocking out a guy who shouldn't be in the ring against him. But shouldn't this have been on the... like 2-hour PBC prelims that aired on FS1? Like
they have these 10, 16 fight cards. You can't squeeze them all in. Fox wants to air in prime time. You can't do that early in the day. It makes for a bad look, but he would be fighting in front of that many people in the daytime if the fight started a little earlier.
Yeah, TV.
Like, Guerrero should be on TV.
Well, at least it would be on TV. Wouldn't you think you'd attract more viewers slipping through if, oh, Robert Guerrero is still fighting rather than two schlubs you never heard of? I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, look, in the grand scheme of boxing indignities, this does not even really faze me. I mean, he got out of the ring without having a pizza thrown at him, right?
Wow. In that arena, that's a victory right there. All right, elsewhere this week in box, DAZN, Verona, New York. Man, it must have been cold up there. Dmitry Bivol defends his version of the 175 title with a fairly easy 12-round decision over the plasterer of the local council, former Bernard Hopkins, I'll send your ass to hell through the ropes, Joe Smith Jr. Bivol's got a lot of craft. Couldn't finish the show here. I'll give Joe Smith credit for having a tough chin. Do you take away anything? Kovalev wants him next. What do you care? Do you care at all? Do you care?
You know what? I do care. I was watching this fight and getting into it. Bivol.
Really?
That guy's good.
He is crafty.
I was seeing some things in there that got me more excited than, you know, I didn't pay too close. The Jean Pascal fight was so bad. I was just like, I don't even want to acknowledge this. That Bivol didn't finish Pascal was a little alarming to me. But watching him in this fight, even though the criticism of Bivol that's evolving of him basically not going for it, right? Of not stepping on the gas and going for the finish when he's clearly better than his opponent. That may remain and that may be valid, but yo, that guy was really good. I mean, it was effortless. He stuffed everything that Joe Smith attempted to do. And Joe Smith is not like a guy who arrives with plan A, B, C, and D, but still, for 12 rounds, that level of concentration and mastery and craft and just, you know, to deal with a guy who is a very strong opponent, at least, and will throw punches. I thought it was really an impressive performance. And it's like there's an efficiency of movement. He's boxing so well, Bivol, without using more of the ring than he needs to. I thought it really, really impressive, and just landing almost at will. And I think that's where the criticism comes in, because people say, well, if you're landing at will, why wouldn't you will yourself to land some more? But what are you going to do?
Well, I thought, you know, Smith had some balls in there. He had a tough chin because he was getting hit. He was getting lit up and he wasn't backing down. And yeah, that's the way it was. Shout out to DAZN for no longer, it seems, using Sugar Ray Leonard on the broadcast, which seemed like an expensive waste of time. And now they added Mannix to this week's booth, which was Brian Kenny, Sergio Mora, and Mannix, while Todd Grisham was out in Europe doing a Glory kickboxing card. I thought it was a fairly good team. It's a much better look than Sugar Ray.
It's fine. I enjoyed it. Brian Kenny was in there too, right? Doing the porcupine stuff. I don't know, man. Who cares? They're calling the fights. I enjoyed the fights. What I want to ask you about. Oh, you know what DAZN should do? Just do winner's bracket, loser's bracket of this card. They're not, give Callum Johnson another shot at a title. Give him Bivol. Keep it in the family. Because I think that Bivol wins that fight, but it's interesting. You saw Callum Johnson beat the hell out of
I saw the result,
Monahan.
Not the fight. I did see the result, and afterwards Callum said, I could knock out any light heavyweight. So he wants himself some Bivol, but there's this other man.
Sergei Kovalev.
But Sergei is on the wrong side of the street, correct? Even though Main Events promotes Bivol and Sergei.
Who knows? ESPN did pick up an option on or Top Rank through ESPN. I don't even know how to describe these moves anymore. Did pick up CAA picked up an option on on Sergei Kovalev. But I don't think that Kovalev is such a coveted fighter for them that they wouldn't be able to work out a deal under the right circumstances. But who knows? I think that those fights could be made if they need to. But without that, I'm saying even if Kovalev is stuck over there fighting, well, not stuck. He could fight Vozdik. He could fight lots of good light heavyweights or guys coming up from 168, over with Top Rank. But in the DAZN, if they got to keep it in the family, I don't mind Callum Johnson against Bivol next. And as an undercard, it'd be fun as hell to finally get that Long Island grudge match of Shawnee Monahan versus Joe Smith Jr. Crossroads, loser goes home. I mean, they had wars in the amateurs, and that's the last step for them. That is the Jarrell Miller versus Babyface Kalnatsky of the Long Island division.
I made an extra strong
Lady, you're scaring us. Indeed. Hey, Mo Hooker. Hooker headlines, defended his 140 title on the undercard with an easy points win over Mikkel Lespierre. Rafe, I don't care.
I don't care.
All right, let's roll through. Daniel Dubois, the heavyweight you mentioned, he blew away Razvan Kojanu in two rounds. Afterwards, he said, quote, one day me and Joshua, hopefully, can get it on. You know what, Daniel Dubois? I love your daddy.
We good friends. I love your daddy. But let's get it on.
And the key here is that Dubois, who's what, like 19 or 21 or, I don't know, they say for 680, said something like that. He says he has floored AJ in sparring, but then asked directly, he won't bring up details because what happens in sparring stays in sparring. Rafe, how far away are we on me actually caring enough to, like, watch Daniel Dubois fight and not just talk about him?
You want me? I can make you care about Daniel Dubois right now. Here it is. You give him the right nickname, and then whoever his opponents are, you can say, "Boy, you're getting beat by a man with double D's."
Wow! But is he good enough? He's not good enough for
who the hell knows.
Anthony,
he's heavyweight. You can't tell until they start fighting real fights.
All right. I'm getting pretty close though.
If you don't know who he is, look him up.
I'm pretty close, Dwyer. I am pretty close. Also this weekend in Accra, Ghana, this one slipped under our radar, Rafe. 41-year-old Joshua Clady came back. TKO 6 over Mfame. Is that like Sirhan Sirhan? I don't, shout out to RFK on that one. Anyway, Rafe, he retired afterwards. He said this one was for the fans. Joshua Claudi's career is over. Did he lose to that shapeshifter Mundeen or did he win? I forgot. I'm too lazy to look it up, Rafe. Either way, what's your favorite Joshua Claudi memory? It's all over, Rafe. The career is over.
It's got to be getting punched with two fists at the same time by Manny Pacquiao is my favorite Josh Claudi memory.
How have we ever forgiven Josh Claudi? Because, look, we thought that was going to be –
for the bang-bang fight?
For the bang-bang-bang. Try and stop me. Bang. We thought that was going to be Maypac. All the promoters did. They got Jerry World for that fight. Claudi, the last-minute sub. As we all know, he laid an egg. He didn't try to win. He stood behind that high guard. Manny lit him up. That was the last time we actually cared about the guy, Rafe. Should we ever take him off the hook for that performance?
Probably not. What is there to, what is the redeeming thing? He had a fun fight with Miguel Cotto when Cotto was not even sure if he wanted to be a boxer after recovering from the first Margarito fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like Claudi, for the money he was making in that Jerry World fight, owed us a chance to see him get sent to hell, right? Or is that just weird backwards boxing fan talk?
Well, he doesn't owe us anything, but we also don't owe him any sort of fond legacy talk. He's just a dude. Congratulations.
All right. Congratulations. He is gone. All right, Rafe, we're going to get to latest news in a second. Before we do, hey, how about a word from our friends and sponsors?
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
And we're back. Rafe Boogs, your boy BC, coming at you. The State of Combat. Latest news. And it begins with Triple G. Finally, Rafe. I mean, we said pee or get off the throne. He finally did. He signs. And as we record this morning, I believe in LA, in your backyard, they are going to formally announce us that Triple G has a multi-fight deal with DAZN. What is it? Something like, I forgot the details. It's a lot of money. And it's offering Triple G a chance at purchasing equity in the company. It's offering him 4 guaranteed dates for his fledgling Triple G promotions. It's also offering him, after a June sort of setup fight, a chance at a 3rd Canelo fight this fall if Big Red can defeat Danny Jacobs on May 4th. Rafe, strong move. A strong move. We know that ESPN was involved in talks, PBC. In the end, DAZN has more money and more big-name middleweights. Do you have any other thoughts that we haven't covered every week when we brought this up about your boy Tripp's sign-in?
My only thought is that this took so long. Everyone knew this was the move that he should have made since way back last year, basically since the day that they announced the end of HBO Boxing. So why did they string it out? I'm sure there are some business reasons, but it has not been fun to watch. And he's lost real career momentum, which is weird to say. That shouldn't happen over 6 months, but that's kind of what has happened. I think he is not in that conversation, the boxing conversation, the way he has been for the last few years, which is, it feels weird as a couple of good boys here. I'm not used to it, but at the same time, you can't. No one to blame at all. But we'll see. Now it's on Triple G to make some interesting fights and sort of get back in there.
Well, I mean,
obviously he can.
Plenty of chances to do that when you consider you got Canelo, Jacobs, who you have to believe, win or lose, he's going to end up facing in a rematch. You got Lemieux for a quick stay busy. You got Andrade. It looks like Billy Joe Saunders is headed to ESPN, was the latest rumors on that. So he's out of the picture, but you certainly got a good mix. If he wants to go to 68, you got Callum Smith. there's opportunities for him financially. Brian. He says, by the way, it looks like he's staying with Tom Loeffler. So the top Coppinger and Dan Rayfield were wrong on that regard. It's a good business move, but look what this means for DAZN. Okay. Remember a month ago, we were like, is DAZN going in the right direction? Are the wheels going to fall off? Is this thing going to fall apart? The ace in the hole was that it seems like they have more money than everybody else from this Ukrainian oligarch. And you know what they have now? The biggest star in the sport in Anthony Joshua, the biggest pay-per-view draw in North America in Canelo Alvarez, who they've taken off pay-per-view. Now they have Gennady Golovkin. And if they bring him back in June, they can do it in the same month as AJ fighting Big Baby. So the people that sign on for 1 month free get to see both. And now they can tease you with the idea of Triple G Canelo 3, which in all, you know, all intents and purposes, probably the biggest fight this year. You got to give DAZN credit, Rafe. They're swinging that stick around. And I don't feel like this is the end of the people they can attract.
No, in fact, you see the sort of cascade effect happening, and I'm sure this is our next item in the news, is that DAZN reportedly is making overtures with Deontay Wilder. Him and Wilder and John Skipper are supposed to meet this week, right? Wow. And I don't know, I hope they don't have the Oscar meeting. I hope that kind of persuasion doesn't have to happen with an active fighter. But they're gonna talk, they're gonna hash it out, they're gonna see if there's a way to do some business over here, because last week or whenever, the idea of Brazil Wilder wasn't really popping off on pay-per-view for any fan with a brain on his or her head.
Well, here's the timeline here, all right? Out of nowhere, Top Coppinger, Mike Coppinger, comes out with the report. Like you mentioned, Wilder's going to talk with Skipper, and Lou DiBella set it up, and they hadn't told Al Haymon and Shelley Finkel. Don't tinkle with the what?
Let me tell you, don't you tinkle with the Finkel.
Well, it looks like he tinkled right there. Big sweet Lou tinkled, it looks like. We don't know what became of that or if it happened yet. We do know Oscar is a freak if he's going to be involved that meeting.
I love watching, De La Hoya.
Oh, De La Hoya was a freak.
Yes, he was, Washkiel. He was, and he still is. Anyway, here's the deal. If Wilder ends up somehow signing with DAZN on some kind of deal that gets him the Joshua fight, and I feel like any PBC guy, if they stand up for themselves, I feel like they can get it, because the key of what Al Heyman's doing is you sign with Heyman, so he's tied up with you seemingly for life, but there's no promoter that you're tied up with for life. That's the whole Al Heyman, you know, backdoor plan here. So I feel like if Wilder stood up for himself and fought this, what is Showtime, Fox, and Payman going to do? Offer him a ton of money from the vault,
the Waddell and Reed vault?
I'm not really sure. But what's interesting is after Kopp reported that, he went on just yesterday on Sunday on that Fox PBC what's that show called?
Inside PBC Boxing with Kate Abdo.
And suddenly he flipped his script and said that, no, Wilder is going to fight Brazil on, what was it, May 18th?
18.
And did not mention Showtime pay-per-view. And that was the thing that leaked in recent days. Boxing Twitter going nuts saying if Wilder Brazil is on Showtime pay-per-view, come on. And the reason why it would be, of course, is because Wilder's been offered a deal by ESPN, and now seemingly DAZN's online one, and they got a ton of money to offer him, like $20 million per fight. So if Showtime's going to broadcast this fight, it would seemingly have to be on pay-per-view. The problem is, we all know Wilder Brazil, while you can talk up the trash-talking side of it, you can talk up the idea that, what, Wilder's brother brawled with Brazil in the hotel lobby that time. Look, there's something you can make there, and the fight wouldn't stink. Boost Brazil's a big dude. It would be a brawl. It would be a knockout. Not a pay-per-view. We know that. You know that. Glazer knows that. Dwyer knows that. Even Wilder knows it. And Wilder has done one interview in the past week, an exclusive with the Boxing Voice. And here's what he said, quote, pay-per-view for me is definitely those big moments, those special magical moments for fights that people have to see. Brazil don't fit that bill. Nobody knows Brazil. He tries to play that tough man role, but his voice ain't even deep enough for starters, and he ain't got no swagger. End quote. Good Lord, thank you, Deontay Wilder. Wow, Rafe.
Hashtag quality hate. Shout out to Adam Abramowitz, Saturday Night Boxing, a service that I have.
Wow. He's speaking what we're all thinking, Rafe.
Well, right? I thought you were going to play some funny sound.
So did
sounds
I,
there.
But
I just saw you looking at the soundboard. I'm thinking, or looking at whatever I don't know what you're looking at down there. Pictures of Keith Thurman. I don't know.
Wow. Wow. The honesty there, but here's the deal. I don't have it. You know, I mean, look, we, as a fan, don't you want to see more PBC guys break off and potentially go? Like, Daniel Jacobs seemed to stand up for himself. Even though he's still repped by Al Heyman, he went to Eddie and originally HBO and now DAZN for big money. If Deontay Wilder pulls this move off, wouldn't that open up the floodgates?
It would seem that way. He would be the first really high profile. And you can't, it's not, it wouldn't really, you can't really call it a, the first one to defect, because he's not defecting from anything. Heyman is still his advisor, the same way he would advise any of his other fighters. And if he's giving him good advice, he probably is saying, go take that money, because it may not be able, unless the Waddell and Reed treasure chest is still available, the rest, the deals on paper don't seem to cover the kind of money that DAZN is offering guys like Wilder. And we hear rumors already of Jermall Charlo maybe having a little, having tea and crumpets with our guy Eddie Hearn maybe this week.
So that's a natural
segue. Coming over to get some of those big middleweight fights.
Real quick, that's a natural segue. Hearn came out and spoke about it, and he says, we haven't met yet. We talked on the phone, but we're going to have a meeting. And his message to Jermall Charlo, he said on the phone, was, what the F are you waiting for? Basically saying this, like, you say you got to go talk to Al Heyman. You got to call Mr. Kanta. You're saying that, and what's he going to do? He's going to offer you a couple extra million, but I can pay you more and give you the opponents you want. So, Rafe, this is now going to put some legitimate pressure on Al Heyman, Fox, and Showtime, because
everybody,
if any of these fighters stand
eat,
up.
Baby, everybody got to eat.
Yeah, AJ was right on that. AJ was damn right.
Everybody's got to eat, baby. So, yeah.
So, yeah. And here's the deal, Rafe. We're going to find out what tricks Al Heyman really has up his sleeve to keep all these guys happy, because for a guy like Jermall Charlo at 160, there are not opponents unless Herd's moving up. There just are not opponents at PBC that are attractive. They're all at DAZN. So it's going to be very interesting, because I think it used to be when a Roc Nation or an Eddie Hearn would offer Adrian Broner this huge salary, right? Al would just, it seemingly would just say, here, let me throw you some under the table to keep you happy. But when you're talking to Broner, you can also promise Broner Manny Pacquiao and all these other big welterweights, right? Who are you going to promise Jermall Charlo? Who are you going to promise Deontay Wilder, Rafe?
There are not a lot of options over there. I mean, Deontay Wilder, they can make some, you promise an F.A. Ajogba after you turn him into a star in 5 years? I don't know. That's not probably what Deontay Wilder wants to hear in his early 30s with some of the biggest fights in the sport available to him if he just, acts like the free agent he apparently is in the sport, at least promotionally and network wise.
Are one of these guys going to jack from L? Is it going to happen?
Hey, they're not jacking from Al. That's the beauty of what Al does. Yeah, while, yes, it may be – right now he may be having some problems delivering them all to the platforms that expect them, because he obviously the deals with Fox and Showtime, they expect guys like Wild. That's what they're paying millions of dollars for. But – So that is a problem that Al has to deal with. But for the fighters, this is still good. I guess it only becomes alarming to me, I think, if it becomes clear that somehow Al Heyman's influence is leading fighters towards taking options that aren't the best for their career, that aren't making them the best money, giving them the best opportunities to become stars, that aren't making what are truly the best fights. Because guys like Deontay Wilder, Jermall Charlo, they don't need protection at this point in their careers. They are pretty much in their primes at the top of their respective divisions, and they don't need to be, you know, they don't need to be matched carefully anymore. Just they need to be pushed into the biggest, most important fights where they'll make the most money. And obviously you control what you can to give your guys the best opportunities to succeed, but they don't need protection like some kind of prospect anymore.
It's a hard on day for me today.
It may be a hard on day for fans, Rafe, because this is the fans' dream, right? That Wilder would consummate an Anthony Josh fight, that he would go to DAZN, that Jermall Charlo would fight Triple G or Jacobs, you know, and touch M's or fight Canelo. But what would that mean? Like, not that we're supposed to care about the networks. Okay, so full disclosure, I'm somewhat employed by some of these networks, so I don't want to see any of them go down, but I'm not sure that's the care of many fans. But this has to be potential bad news for Fox or Showtime if these PBC guys can eventually jump over. But maybe does this open the door for where boxing should be, where guys don't need to be tied down. These guys don't need to then go to the zone and be there for life. Could this potentially open the door where guys on PBC could leave for one fight to go make a fight that would make sense on the zone and then come back and continue fighting on Showtime and Fox? Should fans care? Does it matter? Is this a good thing for boxing, or is this going to only bring more guys to DAZN and ruin Showtime and Fox? Where is this going, Rafe?
Well, what's good for boxing is could also be bad for networks or streaming platforms or whatever. We don't really know how all of it's going to shake out. I don't think that this moment is going to last indefinitely, where there are several different outfits spending big money, putting pressure on networks to up the ante with every fight every month, offering new deals, having attractive fights on the other side. That kind of pressure is something that exists now because of all the money that DAZN is pouring into it. DAZN has big aspirations throughout the world in sports, though. They don't want to just be the leaders in boxing. They're looking down the line at picking up big major U.S. team rights, now U.S. league rights. Now, is that possible for a streaming platform? We don't know. Maybe not. That's why they hired John Skipper. We were at ESPN when John Skipper there. He wasn't exactly like a champion of boxing. It doesn't really profile as the kind of sport. He's a soccer guy, a basketball guy, but he knows business and he knows how to cut deals. But eventually they want him to make deals with the NBA, with the MLB. You know, well, they made the little deal with the MLB. That's their end game. At that point, do they stop spending some of that money on boxing? We don't know. That's all years down the line in all likelihood.
We may have to bring in your boy Evan Rakowski of the Fisticionados podcast to sort of break this all down for us, because it's getting hairy in here. Because look at power moves. Eddie Hearn took AJ, got him away from Showtime, brought him to DAZN. Now he's trying to do the same thing with Wilder. Like, this guy is a trickster. He's making moves, Rafe. He may end up being boxing's Robin Hood in the end. It's all going to have to happen on his platform. But, like, it's crazy right now. But I also have fear. When is this Ukrainian oligarch's war chest going to run out? Can it run out?
That is the danger. That, look, as people who work in media, we have observed and sometimes experienced what it is like to have to, when your boss is a crazy rich man. It's great when everything's going well, and then when the guy spending all the money decides he doesn't like the toy anymore, you're done. And that is, the rug can get pulled out on DAZN like that. And obviously they're going to do everything they can to not let that happen, but that's always a possibility on some level.
And I'm a DAZN subscriber, right? I'm paying my $9.99 a month. I heard Canelo was in the fold. I said, okay, you know, I know how Canelo operates.
Yeah. So it's not just Canelo. It's AJ. It's Triple J. Everyone's got a price for the $1 million man, Eddie Hearn. All right. Everyone. Ha 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 ha. In other latest news, Rafe. Wow. Sad news. Super middleweight title holder Caleb Plant's mother, shot and killed by a Tennessee deputy. She pulled a knife after being, placed in an ambulance. We don't know details about why. We know that Caleb Plant had a really rough upbringing, and it seems like in the tributes he did to his mother on social media that she had some demons, but that was a wild headline to come across. We know that Caleb Plant's dealt with loss of his daughter as well. Wow, Rafe, tough break there. I don't know if
he's very sad. You know, your heart goes out to him and his family, and condolences, and you hate to see, you hate to see it.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know how to roll off of that. That's tough there, Rafe. In other news, former two division title holder, the Magic Man, Rafe, Paulie Malignaggi, after a 2-year retirement.
Boxing is full of shit, man.
So here's what he's going to do. He's back, and he's not back in the box. He's back in the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, signing a 2-year deal with the fledgling promotion. His debut expected to come in June in Manchester, New Hampshire. Just a reminder, only 3 states are currently regulated for this type of combat: Wyoming, Mississippi, and New Hampshire, Rafe. Before we throw to Paulie and get his side of the tale, you surprised? You excited? You care?
I don't really care. I am a little bit surprised, because what's been the knock on Paulie throughout his entire boxing career? He's got brittle hands. He used to break his hands all the time. It's why he supposedly couldn't throw his right hand with full power throughout most of his career. Uh-oh, did Paulie want to jump in here?
Yo, relax, you know what I mean?
I'm sorry, Polly. Your hands just, they break. So how are you going to be fighting with no gloves? I don't know.
Athletes sleeping block women. It's 2013. That's what we do.
Well, now it's 2019 and athletes fight with bare knuckles. We're going to find out, Rafe. Hey, let's not bury the lead anymore. Let's go right to the source.
The bareback champion.
The magic man himself, Showtime broadcaster extraordinaire, Pauly Malignaggi, coming right at you. Enjoy. Pauly Malignaggi, two-time world champion in boxing. But Pauly, I had to get you on the line right away when I read this press release because it's a shocker to me. Bare knuckle fighting championship, 38 years old. You're back after 2 years. Bro, you're taking the gloves off here. You got to tell me how this happened. What's the mindset here entering into this?
Yeah, literally dropping the gloves, right? but still fighting. So, you know, NHL style. I don't know. You know, it wasn't really something that crossed my mind until I was on a radio show with Dave Feldman a couple of months ago. And it still didn't cross my mind even back then. But then, you know, me and him spoke about some things. And, you know, I liked the numbers he was throwing at me. And I felt like it's a good opportunity for me to kind of step in. You know, I wouldn't say I'm going to start campaigning and resume like an entire career here because at 38, you don't do that. But I still think there's, you know, there's fights I can take and make things exciting. And of course, you know, there's the whole McGregor beef that maybe this coward will maybe meet me in the middle somewhere, you know. And I think
if you have.
Yeah, I got the end of that. You said this coward McGregor might. So is this, look, the natural response when people were going, is this a long play to lure Conor into a boxing match?
I don't think it's a long play because, you know, I'm not here for the long haul. But I think, you know, we're not going to do it in MMA, right? I mean, it's obvious we're not going to do it in MMA. The beef wasn't do it in boxing if we're going to settle it because the beef was in boxing. You know, he, according to him, he did all these things, including drop me, according to him, right? So the beef was in boxing, but he's not going to do it in boxing either because he obviously doesn't want to be proven the bum that he is at that too. So I figured, you know what? This is a kind of a play in the middle. You know, we can do a bare knuckle. He's a supposed puncher. I don't think he was a puncher. You know, I never felt he was a puncher. So you know, he's a supposed puncher with a small MMA glove. So obviously he's going to be some kind of a puncher with the bare knuckles, right? So, I mean, it's got to give him some kind of advantage, you would think, for those that assume he's a puncher. You know, I know the puncher power I'm dealing with him. And I know it's not anything to be scared about, but I also think got the better of me with boxing gloves, according to him. I think this is a no-brainer, especially with the kind of money we can generate.
Now, you're a giant name for BKFC to add. We've seen a bunch of former MMA stars. They just added Artem Lobov, the former UFC fighter who a lot of people know on the MMA side is best friend, longtime training partner with Conor McGregor. Are we going to see a Pauly Lobov showdown as sort of a pro wrestling way to grab Conor's attention? I mean, if you beat his boy, he may have to do the old Klitschko brother routine and get his brothers back, correct?
If I fight Lobov, I mean they might arrest me for an assault. You know, I don't know that that's the way to go. You know, I really didn't sign into BKFC to look at Artem Lobov, to be honest with you. But you know, I do know that he signed to the promotion as well. I think the guy is Conor's personal floor mopper, you know, or whatever else he does as a favor of Conor, because I don't think he's ever actually made a name for himself for his own combat skills at all. And honestly, he's going to step into boxing, bare knuckle or whatever, you know, it is. He's not. I think there's levels to this thing. It, like I said, I mean, if I end up fighting him, it would be an assault. I don't. Then I'm like a bad guy. You know what I mean? If I put this guy in a hospital or I put this guy in some worse damage, then I'm the bad guy. What am I going to do? Then I'm a bad guy? Like, it's kind of counterproductive in that regard. I'm not trying to be Drago to Conor's Rocky here. You know what I'm saying? But I would like that for at least the opportunity for Conor, if he's that brave, to at least say, okay, this is in the middle. Let's do it. You know, I know what Conor's thinking. I know Conor knows he's not even remotely on my level. I know Conor knows exactly what happened in that 12 round sparring. That's why he's never shown the video. But regardless, I just find it funny that, you know, we keep hounding him, we keep exposing him, and he keeps exposing himself as the coward that he is. So I figured it, you know, there's only 2 minute rounds of this, Brian. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
It's not that long it's not that long to the finish line, you know? So all even right. A bum quitter coward like McGregor, who's not the bravest guy in the world at all, he's actually a coward. Even he, if he's taking a beating, can actually all tunnel and say, you know what, I've just got to stick this out just for a little bit and I can at least survive at this, you know? Like, even a coward like that can always see the end of light at the end of the tunnel. So I figured, like, it would benefit him as well to try to at least man up in some kind of way.
All right, let me ask you the hard questions here, because I mentioned it was a shocker when this was announced, because I think the natural reaction for people is to say, okay, Paulie, slick boxer. I don't care about the age. You can get in shape. You've still got it. But bare knuckle, don't you have a history of hand issues? Is this the right move? How do you defend that?
You know, I think this, you know, you obviously have had hand injuries in the past, but here's how I defend this. When you're using your bare knuckles, you don't have to throw everything full strength. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you're not going to be throwing haymakers. It's not like people think bare knuckle and they think some kind of caveman stuff. You know, there's still some kind of technique to it. There's still some kind of game planning to it. It's a MMA. It's somewhere in the middle, you know? And so there's also a different way you're going to be throwing punches, a different way you're going to be defending and things of that nature. You know, I think hand injuries can obviously happen in bare knuckle, but hand injuries can happen in any combat sport. Sometimes you take the gloves for granted and you don't make a proper fist. You don't do things like that you should. And that's why you get hurt even with gloves on, you know, but with bare knuckle, I think it emphasizes the importance of understanding you can't throw everything at full strength. Some things are full strength, some things are not, the importance of making a proper fist, things of that nature. So I also believe that you may not get as hurt. Sure, you'll feel the bruising on your hands, of course, but that's not long term.
All right, now what about the idea you mentioned that it's a little? I think there's a reason more MMA guys have come to this type of combat than boxing, because you can dirty box. I think you can hold and punch. There's some elements of the MMA infighting. Is that going to be a negative against you? How are you going to deal with that?
You know, I'll deal with it. Obviously, I'm going to be training for it, but you know, in order to get that close, you have to close the gap and close range, right? And that means you have to get through my hand speed as well. My hands are very fast, barehanded. I mean, I was always known as for my speed, but you're gonna put me in a barehanded situation. I'm very, very fast. You know, I'm telling you, like the barehanded speed is going to really be a problem. And so, yeah, you can get close and try to wrestle around. I mean, I'm not going to sit there like a heavy bag and let you wrestle with me all over the place. Obviously, of course, you know, to earn your way into that distance, you're going to have to get through an assault. And again, with bare knuckles, shots don't have to be full strength to bust you up. You know what I'm saying? My knuckles just have to connect. And my knuckles are going to connect because I have the accuracy of a pro boxer.
This is interesting. I'm fired up. Now, I got to ask you, your great corner man, Peter Cards, the guy you do the Brooklyn to the World podcast on Showtime Sports, that is back. Check it out on YouTube. It is back in action. The great Seth Nyman producing you there. Peter Cards has been in a few bare knuckle fisticuffs in his day. Is he going to train you for this?
Peter's always on Team Mile and Edge. That's my best friend, and he's my ride or die brother. You know, he'll definitely be there and he'll be supporting. Obviously, yeah, just like everybody else, Peter did at first have his reservations about it and think I was crazy. And you know, Peter knows I live a comfortable life, so he was wondering what the deal was. But then, you know, we looked at the overall situation, just like I explained to the rest of my family and team. And, you know, it starts to make more sense once you delve deeper into it.
So outside of, look, there's some money involved. There's maybe McGregor-ish involved. Is this like there's still an itch in you? Like, hey, NBA guys retire. They play in the summer leagues deep into their 40s and 50s. Is this what this is kind of like?
Well, they play in Ice Cube's 3-on-3, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to a degree, like in the summer sort of thing, yes, you know. I don't think you ever completely don't miss it, you know. I think you don't miss is the training and the making weight part of it. But, you know, I think once you get over that, you know, you do miss fight night. Sometimes you do miss the anticipation of being the center of attention again and whatnot. It's weird. You know, I can't say I miss it totally, but of course some of it is the rush of just competition. You know, I don't need to be famous. Like I can't say I miss the fame part of it, but I do sometimes miss competing, and of course the money's good.
All right. Now, I think the allure, I think one of the things that BKFC is selling, especially for somebody like me who was a big fan of those early UFC days where it felt illegal and raw and absurd, there's some of that feel. I mean, these fight cards are coming out of like Wyoming. Is there any appeal for you in that it's sort of like reckless and rugged?
Yeah, you know, I didn't grow up with a silver spoon in my mouth. So, you know, the reckless and rugged is where I come from, you know. So to kind of go back to that, but now have the skills of a trained fighter through so many years in boxing. Yeah, there's an allure to that, of course, you know, and like I said, I mean, there's an allure, there's the allure to compete again. And of course, the allure of the money as well. And I think it's a one hand washing the other situation, because BKFC needed somebody like me to kind of generate crossover media to cover that sport. And when they do cover the sport, they'll realize that, and the fans will start to realize that, you know what, it is exciting and there is a lot to see and there is a lot to get excited about. And they wouldn't have got that kind of press without signing somebody like me. So I think it's a one hand wash for the other, where I can kind of get that itch out and also get paid, while also they can get the coverage they need. Because all they need really is the eyeballs. Once they get the eyeballs, I believe fans will gravitate to the sport.
All right. One thing I love about your podcast, which has changed names at times, it's Brooklyn to the World right now, I believe. But I love the storytelling. I love when Peter Kartz talks about punching a cab driver in the gut on New Year's Eve. I love all that stuff. So do you have a story? When was the last Pauly Malignaggi bare knuckle fist fight?
Last Pauly Malignaggi bare knuckle street fight was, I was 31 years old. So it's been a little while. It's been a little while. And it was a road rage incident.
Oh, wow. And wow.
And I got arrested.
Did somebody get a two-piece out of this? What happened?
Yeah. It was a little bit. I'll tell you. I'll give you the short version, because I don't want to give you a version and get myself into any trouble. But it was a little bit of a road rage incident. I was actually in camp for a Vyacheslav Sinchenko fight, and I got myself arrested. And then I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad. You know, I'm training for the world title. You know, honestly, you know, you don't plan on getting into a street fight. It was just things just end up. And I got myself arrested, and the court date, when I got out, obviously I got out the next day, and the court date ends up being scheduled 3 days after the Zinchenko fight.
Wow. That was in the Ukraine, right?
In the Zinchenko fight. Yeah. And so obviously I come back from the Ukraine as a new world champion, you know? And when I got to the courthouse on Tuesday, I came back, the fight was on a Sunday. I came back Monday, and Tuesday morning I had my court date. So, you know, I show up totally normal, you know, because when I got arrested, no press really covered it. So when I got to the courthouse on Tuesday morning, there were news cameras. Like, you know, they, well, I wouldn't say like all the news was there, but like, I remember like New York Channel 7 Eyewitness News was there and everything else, you know? And they covered it like this, like the quote unquote assault that happened that day. Like, and they basically covered it like he might be a world champion, but it didn't prevent him from going crazy in the street and whatnot. You know, they made me look like a lunatic, which obviously wasn't the story at all, you know, but cause I'm not going to just attack somebody for no reason. But you know, it was funny, because the way they made it sound, I had people calling me. They thought I was in jail, you know, it didn't happen that day, nor was I in jail that day. That day was just my court date. But even the way the news spun it, it was kind of prophetic in the way the news would start covering news in the future, which now is like out of this world crazy.
Oh yeah, TMZ, all that stuff. I want to get you quickly your thoughts on Mikey Garcia, Errol Spence Jr. this Saturday on Fox pay-per-view. We're all fired up because of the size of Mikey's balls to actually get into a fight like this. I'm telling you, I feel old school vibes, like we're going to see some kind of like Leonard Hearns type stuff in terms of people daring to be great. But does Mikey really have a chance against a welterweight that big?
I think it's more Leonard versus Durant and Leonard Hearns. You know, you could feel like a little bit of a risk factor for Errol, but of course you favor him. You know what I'm saying? But you can feel the ballsy factor of a Garcia kind of falling into the Durant-esque type of mentality. Obviously, minus the dirty grunge, low down attitude that Durant had, but nonetheless, in the ring, you could see Garcia. The fight gets closer. You can see Garcia sort of having moments, and you see Garcia sort of getting his respect in the fight, you know, and obviously you want to see Errol push, because so far he hasn't been pushed aside from that Kell Brook fight, you know, and to have, you know, to have that kind of fight in the States now, where Errol has a chance to kind of get that notoriety and both guys kind of dare to be great and rise to the occasion. I'll be honest, at first I wasn't sold on this fight. I wasn't crazy about it, but as it gets closer, the hype is selling me. I mean,
Oh yeah, I'm fired up. All right, two on the way out. One real quick here. If you would have beaten Adrian Broner in that split decision loss, do you think you would have gotten Floyd?
Yes, I do. Wow. There was talk about that, and yes, I do think I would have gotten Floyd.
Do you ever think about what that $5 to $7 million?
I had conversations with Al Heyman before that, and yes, I would have gotten Floyd. But hey, that's the way it happens. That's the way it goes. My only regret about the Adrian Broner fight isn't so much that I lost the fight. My regret is, if you're going to give it to him, probably should have made the rematch within 6 months.
Yeah.
Because it was such a highly rated show. I think it was the highest rated championship boxing show that year on Showtime, maybe in the States in general. And there was a built-in rematch storyline there, you know, on all cylinders, you know. And I think they really dropped the ball on not making the immediate rematch, and they kind of let it go by. Because our careers after that kind of, I wouldn't say tanked, because Adrian's been able to make a lot of money, and I even made some money afterwards, but I'd say our careers kind of fluttered away after that, and when it could have probably become a trilogy had they made that rematch.
All right, to close here, Paulie, I want to have fun with you for 1 second. You're outstanding. I think the best analyst in the game in boxing and the work you do for Showtime. But something's changed in boxing analysis over the last year and a half. Instead of, let's say there's a situation where fighter A hurts fighter B mid-round, and he wants to get him out of there, so he starts putting it on him. And then what happens is he kind of runs out of gas in doing that, and suddenly he's the fighter who's backing up. We used to just say, oh, wow, he may have run out of gas. He may have punched himself out. But, Paulie, yeah. Times have changed now. Credible announcers are now saying outrageous things like...
So he shot his load, and now he's getting pummeled.
Oh, and then this guy saying...
He might have shot his load a little bit. Maybe he blew his wad early.
What the hell's going on? We call it Load Watch 2019 on our podcast, and I think it all started real quick with Floyd Mayweather after the McGregor fight.
Yep. Let him shoot his load, and then down the stretch, do what we do best.
When did you think that the fight was starting to turn, when he had shot his load and you could come at him?
Now, Paulie, it's part of the lexicon. Would you in 2019 ever use the term shot his load on a cable broadcast? What's going on here?
You know, I come from... a different terminology for what that expression means. But of course, you can kind of see it in a metaphorical sense, because when you do that, what do you feel? You feel tired, right? So just like in the fight, when you punch yourself out, you feel tired. So I can see where it's sort of a metaphor, but yeah. And I'm not the most PC guy in the world, but yeah, I come from a generation where that meant something else. So it should probably stick to me.
Yeah. It's an addiction right now. Everyone's all over it. I mean, even Mario Lopez, AC Slater was calling a fight card recently on Golden Boy, and he was like,
He may have shot his watts.
I think people need to pull back a little bit on that. Maybe have a little some load management.
It's crazy, because I never even really paid attention to this. But yeah, you do hear that expression a lot more often than you realize.
Our listeners to our podcast brought it to us. Now you hear in the NBA, Kevin Durant won't play because of load management. I don't know what's going on here, Paul.
Oh, man. The prima donnas of the NBA. Come on, man.
Wow, he might have shot his load indeed. Paulie Malignaggi, great chatting with you. Best of luck coming up. Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. We expect a June debut against an opponent to be named later. Can't wait to see what this looks like, buddy. Great to see you getting back out there.
Thanks, man. Always a pleasure.
Hey, special thanks to Paul Malignaggi. Hey, full disclosure as well, Rafe, we are recording this part of the show before the Paulie interview has been recorded. So we don't know what to react to. We don't know if athletes still sleep with a lot of women in 2019.
That interview was epic. Oh, you killed it, fam. God, how do you do it every time?
Can you believe what he said about Load Watch, Rafe? Can you believe it?
He's on the train, him and Paulie Cards. They're out here, you know, counting loads together.
Wow. We're going to listen to that afterwards, just like
Peter
everybody
Cards.
Else. I hope it was a great interview, Rafe.
Peter Cards. I just called you Paulie Cards.
I hope it was a great interview, but in all seriousness, I'm wondering if the BKFC, promoter David Feldman is trying to slow play the idea of getting Conor McGregor inside this bare knuckle bonanza in Wyoming.
That's already been hinted at, right? You know MMA, Brian. Is that remotely possible?
Nah.
Is there enough money?
No. I don't. No, it's not. I mean, look, the UFC still has to kind of approve this. You know, they went all in on the Floyd thing because there was so much money at stake, and they cashed in reportedly upwards of $40 million in that deal. So, no. But he's, you know, Paulie may end up bare knuckle fighting Conor McGregor's boy, Artem Lobov. You don't care about that. That's more MMA, and I know, Rafe, where you stand on a lot of that.
UFC are a bunch of skinhead white guys watching people in the ring who are also look like skinhead white guys.
Wow. Bob never going to live that down, but he don't care. He don't believe in effing contracts. He don't care. Rafe, it's time for weekend preview. Do you care? And also time to break down some Spence Garcia. So are you ready? Are you fired up? Do I need to cool you down at all?
Come on, let me put some water on your balls.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, all right. Okay.
All right.
Cool him down.
Cool me down, Brian.
Cool
down. Rafe, good. No sound issues. A lot of people. Hey, shout out to the people for staying with us last week when we had sound issues galore.
Are you here with me or not?
Look at me. Are you with me?
A lot of people stayed with us. They were with me, so I'm happy about that. Friday night, Rafe, in the zone. And Philly, 2300 arena, the ECW arena. You don't get down with ECW.
Oh, I was definitely down with ECW back in the days, man. It was on some of, you'd find it on weird cable channels, 3 a.m. on like a Friday or a Saturday morning. Oh yeah. The guy with the long hair and the glasses. This is awesome.
Wow. The guy with the long hair and the glasses, who's that?
There was one guy who always in the front row of those.
Oh, yeah. The fan, the super fan. All right. Were you down with the Sandman? I think
when you're in high school, you see the guy comes out and smashing beers. I mean, yes, I was down.
I love when Sandman would use the kendo stick to break open his own forehead and be bleeding before the match even started and then pouring beer on people. By the way, the best wrestling show, Rafe, I was ever at, 98, I think it was January, at a bar in New Britain called Connecticut, hard hit in New Britain called The Sting. The ceiling was so low they couldn't go off the top rope, and I saw full prime ECW, Sandman pouring beer on the guy in front of me. I was in the second row. Amazing, Rafe.
That's why you are a true mark.
Wow. All right. Friday night, in the zone from Philly, the Tevin Farmer show continues. I think the guy fights every 3 weeks. He's on that Sugar Ray Robinson type level here. He's going to fight your boy, the bearded one from England, Jono Carroll, 12 rounds for Farmer's IBF junior lightweight title. Do you care, Rafe?
I cannot care, Brian. I cannot care, but this is ridiculous. I'm glad. I think I like how active Tevin Farmer is. I don't see what the point of making this fight is. Jono Carroll looks ridiculous. I hope that Philly makes him shave that beard. It is ridiculous to have that in a boxing ring. It's a nice fashion. I don't care.
I don't care about Matisse's
life. I guess I do care because I don't like it.
I don't care about his family. Who are we long playing Farmer to fight? It's not like he can fight Gervonta, right?
That's what they – look, I, you don't think that Eddie Hearn might be – throwing out some bucks, and you don't think that Floyd likes money too? If DAZN wants to throw some, kick some of that bread down Floyd's way, why not? You can make a deal.
And Eddie Hearn and these guys have a plan to build a platform. They're luring people like Canelo to the platform and stuff like that.
Hey, in the co-main event, Rafe, I know you care about this. Katie Taylor against Rose Volante. It's a triple belt women's lightweight title unification. 10 rounds. Rafe, come on. You care, right?
Ryan, wow. Look at me. I have 3 belts. Wow.
I normally don't do interview with women unless I fornicate with them.
Wow. Rafe also has that stipulation on this show as well. Although Michaela Mayer was able to slip out of that, which was, wow. Edit that out in the post edit. Edit it out. All right. It's 2019. Wow. Okay. Katie Taylor. We'll see what happens there. Eddie Hearn calls her his favorite fighter. Do you think he actually means that? Isn't Carl Froch his favorite fighter? Darren Barker his favorite fighter?
Tony the Bomber Bellew is his favorite fight.
Yes.
I mean, they're vacationing together.
All right. Here's where I'll credit the zone. They always give us wild crap on the undercard that we should care about. Like that the hardcores like you and me do. Gabe Rosado versus Maciej Suleczki, 10 rounds middleweights. Hell yeah. Rafe, that'll be war. Your son, okay. He's dying. That'll be real war.
Poppy, I gotta stop it. Your son's gonna die. Shout out to Billy Briscoe, Benny Briscoe.
One of the damn Briscoes.
Benny Briscoe's the fighter. Billy Briscoe is the trainer. Great beard, great glasses, great overall look, great real Philly. Yeah, I mean, he's rocking the Philly beard, the Muslim Philly beard. Anyway, Rosado and Suleczki. You know what's scary there, Brian? You know what's really scary? If somehow, and on one hand, it would be exciting. I would be very happy if somehow Rosado wins that fight. If he pulls off an upset, if he finally wins some fight he's not supposed to win. And then Where does that lead, though, Brian? Oh, no. What if he has to fight Canelo or something?
No, what if he gets a Triple G? Because Triple G is supposed to be getting a soft starter in June.
No, I think Rosado, good boy.
Wow, imagine if they, because Gabe's wanted that rematch forever because Gabe had more success than anyone in the early prime Triple G run.
It's still true, but I don't think that should happen again, Brian.
No. Hey, Luke Campbell's gonna fight TBA, 10-round lightweight. You know I love me some Luke Campbell. Why is he fighting in Philadelphia, though, against TBA on a DAZN undercard? I don't get that.
Because he is signed with Matchroom Boxing, and he is owed a date.
Wow, very, very Al Haymon Night of Champions style there. Hank Lundy versus Avery Sparrow, 10 rounds lightweights. Do you care?
No, I don't.
All right, let's go Friday night in Mexico City. Telemundo, if that is a service you have. Diego Cruz versus Mauricio Pinto, 10 rounds welterweights. No.
Huh?
No. I don't. Saturday night, it's time, Rafe. It's time, all right? Saturday night from Jerry World, Arlington, Texas, AT&T Stadium, the home of the Dallas Cowboys. Not at the practice facility in Frisco. We're talking about the damn dome. Fox pay-per-view. This is big. Errol Spence Jr. defends his IBF welterweight title against Mikey Garcia. Wow, Rafe. This fight matters. Two top five-ish pound-for-pound performers, both unbeaten. Mikey daring to be great up that ass. Oh, my God.
Gotta give Mikey the ball sack of the year award for taking that fight because they got to be this big to jump out two weight classes. Balls of the year, Mikey Garcia. Hell yeah.
You're damn right, random guy on the Mayweather gym boxing interview show. Wow, Rafe, I'm fired the heck up. Yes, I was part of the PBC face-to-face that I hosted. Yes, I was part of the PBC countdown episode. Even without those checks that I did cash already, I am in on this fight big time, Rafe, because yes, it's daring to be great, but the craft element is going to be great. And sometimes when you get two crafty guys in there in a fight this big, where it has this much at stake, war breaks out, Rafe. I have a feeling, even though a lot of cynics are telling you,
Errol Spence by murder. Errol's too big, too strong.
A lot of people saying that. I have a feeling that this is going to have whatever 2019 can't really give us Leonard Hearns or Hagler Hearns or Leonard Hagler or whatever, but I think this is going to be, and tell me if I'm crazy, I think this is going to be as close to us getting that in 2019. We can't get good things like Spence Crawford and find out who's for real, but because of Mikey's bag, I think we're going to see something magical. I think we're going to see two guys who will not say no and are going to go for it, Rafe. They're going to put the thing on the table and say, what do you got?
Was that part of the face-to-face episode? Did they put their things on the table
for Patreon subscribers only. They did. Yes.
What did you learn from that?
Wow. No. I won't. I
wouldn't reveal it. No, save it for the subscription. It's Danny's night. It's Danny's night.
Maybe he blew his wad early.
Wow. Let's get that away from me. Rafe, come on. Get fired up. Come on. Tell me I'm not just a shill cashing checks. This is a fight, Rafe.
I'm sorry, Brian. I can't be the one to give you that rude awakening because I'm sitting here even as someone who is not on the PBC dole in any way. I'm excited for this fight. I want to see this fight. I don't know that it's going to be a war or a classic. I think that if it goes Mikey's way, it better not be. It better be a pretty tactical fight. He better figure out some way to outpoint Errol Spence because I don't think he's going to jump up two weight classes and knock him out. But I am curious. The confidence that Mikey Garcia has had from the very beginning, asking for this fight, before Errol Spence had even heard about it, when Errol Spence still thought the best opponent in the world was Chris Algieri, Mikey Garcia was asking for this fight. He was sitting there saying, I think I can beat this guy. So, and we asked Shane Mosley, we've heard other people say it. Mikey must have seen something watching Errol Spence fight. He saw that, okay, I can outbox this guy. There's something that I can do. And he's not, and that's going to nullify all the things that he can also do to me. And I'm going to win this fight. I want to see what it was. I want to see what Mikey saw. I want to see that game plan in action and if he can pull it off.
Well, the crazy thing is I think Mikey has the skills, the mindset, the IQ, the toughness, the balls, all that to force Errol Spence into a plan B to actually make this an amazing fight. But he's going to have to get there. he's going to have to show us that he has elite, amazing chin. It really comes down to the chin. It comes down to the chin, Rafe. Because yes, he's got great defense, he's got timing. He's got to show us that he could get to that point in the fight where he makes Spence have to show us things that we didn't, that Spence has never had to show. Spence said in that face-off, like, I haven't had to show my quickness or my technique because honestly, Spence has just walked dudes down. I mean, the Kell Brook fight showed us a lot, okay? But still, he was the aggressor who walked down and eventually broke Kell Brook's face. And do you know how hard you, as Roy Jones once said, you have to punch to break another man's eye socket? So, Mikey is going to have to show us a crap ton, and it can't just be balls. It has to be like physical toughness, a chin to be able to walk through enough to make this that tactical fight. Here's why you have to get really excited about this fight, because what Mikey keeps saying is nobody has made me bring out my best. Like, I've been waiting for that guy, and I'm taking this challenge because I think this is the guy who can bring out everything that's in me. And it is, it does sort of support Mikey's rise. At 26, at 30, we were like, this guy's great, but why won't he let it all go? Why won't he be a destroyer and walk people down? Well, he started to show you that at 135, like especially against Zlatichinin.
Dejan Zlatichinin?
He started to show you that he can be that guy. So from that point of view, Mikey's amazing. I mean, I don't mean to get all Dwyer on you, but he's absolutely amazing. Yes, the 147 leap is huge, but he could be that guy to expose Errol Spence enough to make this an even fight. But two competing factors against him are the reason why a lot of people are just like Spence by murder and won't even think about it. One is when he moved up to 40 and he took the title from Sergey Lipinets, he got beat up a little bit. Yes, he dropped Lipinets. Yes, he won cleanly. But he hit a certain ceiling. And two, everyone who Spence has touched, he's walked down and broke their spirit, if not their face. So if Lamont Peterson can't get off more than one shot at a time and eventually puts himself in a position where the corner's got to throw in the towel to save him, I know Garcia, I would think Mikey Garcia is better than Lamont Peterson, but how much will his will and his chin allow him to actually make this a fight, Rafe? That's the hook. That's the thing that, like, he's crazy enough, he's bold enough that we have to see. That's why people are going to pay $74.95. Do you have the confidence? I'm not asking you if you think Mikey Garcia can win this. I'm asking you, do you have the confidence that Mikey Garcia can make this anything but Spence walking him down and breaking his will and face?
So for me, Brian, I think that if Mikey Garcia finds himself in a position where he is relying on his will and his chin and his toughness to win this fight, he's done. That means he's going to lose that fight. I think if he wins, it's because he saw and then executed that he can actually outclass Errol Spence, which is hard to imagine right now. But because it's Mikey Garcia, because I think when most people look at both fighters just purely, say, in the quote unquote pound for pound way, as in, you know, who seems to be the more skilled, sharper, ring savvier fighter, you would edge Mikey Garcia just because he seems to have that almost Andre Ward level of next level ring genius. But is that enough against a guy who might be ring Mensa? Shout outs to Bobby Chez. But not ring genius, like, you know, Chez versus Einstein, but he's also bigger, stronger, younger. It's his division, all of those things. I can't wait to find out. You saw him up close fairly recently. How's the size disparity look right now?
What's it gonna look like
in the ring?
I didn't think it was that large in the end. I know Spence is taller.
Are you talking about when they put it on the table now?
Oh my God. We're making shooters low. Wow. Okay, let me just
stop that crap. Stop it.
Yes, let's
stop it.
Yes, please, 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 Teddy. Tell me more, Teddy, please.
Oh, it's a Volkswagen against a Ferrari.
All right. No, I don't want that much. I think the size is not going to matter. The punching power will. So here's what I think here's the thing. I think Mikey's going to taste the power early. Meaning I think he's going to get dropped in the first 4 to 5 rounds. But I don't think that will be the end of the fight. I think Mikey's going to have that moment, sort of like Jacobs had against Golovkin, where you go, okay, it happened. I got caught. I'm not dead. I'm not out of this fight. I'm back in it. And that will be the moment where we find out how great Mikey Garcia is. Not if he wins this fight, to me, that moment. And it may not be a knockdown. It may just be a time where he gets lit up. And that normally is the breaking point. where when you get touched like that, just like when Mikey touched Robert Easter and dropped him, Easter stopped trying to win. Will Mikey be able to go into those plan B, C, and D and force the same out of Errol Spence? I think he will. I think he is that great, Rafe. Timing, defense, strategy. I think he does see things from even the Kell Brook fight that somebody can expose if they are elite in all these different categories. His chin is going to have to be elite because he's going to get hit early, I think, and that's going to be a turning point. I have a fear, though, like a lot of people might, that Mikey could get hit once and then just hide behind the gloves and try to be a counterpuncher the rest of the night and not actually try to win rounds and then maybe try to survive. That would be a bad scenario playing out. I don't think it could happen, though, because Mikey's balls are too big to even get into this. Just to get this fight, he had to show you big balls. He has been saying, I am willing to do anything to win this fight. That's Dare to Be Great Sugar Ray Leonard Tommy Hearns stuff, Rafe. That's like, I'm willing to get knocked out on the grandest stage of them all to prove how good I am. Because of that spirit inside of him, I think he's going to taste Spence's power early, and I think he's going to keep coming. He's going to clear his head, and then we have the real fight, the middle rounds. What can he do to confuse, frustrate Errol Spence, to make him have to do anything but that plan A of walk you down? Because like I mentioned, Spence got lit up a little bit at times by Kell Brook, but his plan A was still coming forward, walking you down. There were some wrinkles he had to show. He certainly had to show toughness against Brook, but he didn't have to rally. He didn't have to do anything different from his expected plan. If my scenario plays out, Rafe, how does Mikey Garcia potentially make Spence have to do something different? What does he have in there? Is it defense? Man. What does he have that's different from everyone else that he's going to be able to make Spence have to not be Spence?
Some of Mikey's movement, it's, you know, Mikey doesn't look like he's super, like he's quick and elusive all the time in the ring, but his footwork, the way he uses distance, he's very smart with that. And he's not going, even he's the guy who, even though he doesn't look like he should be hard to hit, he is much harder to hit when his opponents are actually in there, because he's just thinking a step ahead of them, and he doesn't need to do anything crazy to get out of the way of the punches because they're not even in range. And then when he wants to be in range, he is. Can he do that against a bigger guy like Errol Spence? He's got to take a few more risks, right? He's got to get in, he's got to get effing get inside on him. That's going to be interesting. It's going to be scary. I don't think that he's going to be able to, like you said, there's no way to get through this fight untouched, even though he wants to figure out the closest possible way to achieve it.
Let me ask you this.
His punches are straighter, right? I mean, his right hand is a real weapon. I think he will be able to land it against Spence. Will it make Spence think twice?
That's it.
We've never seen him think
twice. That's the question. Does Mikey potentially have the 147 power, that stiff? We know it's going to be accurate. We know it's going to be stiff. Is it hard enough to make Spence have to alter what he's doing, right? If it's not, I don't see how Mikey can win this fight, because he's not a speedster or a slickster. He's a smart angles footwork guy. But he's not it's not like this is Pernell Whitaker out there. So if we find out by the midway point of the fight, when he starts figuring Errol out and landing some clean shots, if he can get by that early hurdle I talked about, if we get to the midway point of the fight and Mikey does not give Errol, pause, if there's no pause, Errol's going to walk him down and break his face.
Yes, that is an outcome that could definitely happen here. And, you know, we haven't even really brought up Errol Spence as a body puncher yet, which may be, a lot of people consider that his greatest attribute. I mean, and the way that he really attacks and brutalizes people to the body. And I think he will be smart to continue trying to do that against Garcia, whether it means to slow down his movement, to take just take some steam off of Mikey's counters. That is going to, if we see Errol Spence getting to Mikey's body early, and plus however Mikey's going to carry this 147 pounds, we don't know yet. Yeah, that's another thing that just makes it seem like such a big hill to climb. If Errol Spence is the fighter he has appeared to be, this seems like biting off more than maybe even Mikey Garcia can chew.
I'm not here to give you the hipster crazy Garcia by victory prediction. And it's become I'm trendy. In the last week, I was surprised by how many people. I will tell you, Mikey will be in this fight. I will tell you, Mikey is going to let it all hang out. I really believe this will not be a wash. This will not be a waste of our time. Mikey will show us a lot in defeat. But there was a turning point in that face-to-face. Some people think these face-to-face, Max Kellerman face-offs, whatever, are worthless. I've always argued that. I love the genre. I always think you can learn things. And I don't know if you picked up on it. When I sort of challenged the two of them, and I was like, okay, who's got the advantage in all these categories? Speed, power, whatever. Errol kept saying, me, 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 because Mikey was sort of being quiet, just letting them have the moment. But Errol said something key at the end of that. He goes, you know what? It may not matter in the end. Because if my speed can't get me to where I want to go, if my power can't, if my technique can't, if my defense can't, I have the grit. He's basically saying, I have the dog inside. I know that I have the dog inside. It's basically him saying, I know that I'm an all-time great and I'm special and I'm old school and I'm all the things I need to be. So, Mikey, if you are better than I think you are, if you find a way to confuse me and get back into this fight, and if you're shocking the world and you're winning on rounds, I have the dog in me that's going to walk you down and finish you like Sugar Ray Leonard did to Thomas Hearns in what, round 14 back in 81. Like, Rafe, there's a special thing inside of people. It's the it factor. It's that thing you can't put a price on. The old school guys used to have it because boxing back then was more, it seemed about legacy and pride and not as much of a prize fighting glamour thing and money. Let's get in and let's get out. I think Spence has it. And it's because I think he has that, that you add on to all of his other advantages that are already naturally there, right? Garcia moving up in weight, Garcia having more to prove at this weight class. Spence has that grit and that dog that if any point he has to or wants to turn this into a real firefight, I don't think Mikey's going to be able to overcome that. And I think that this leads to my prediction, Rafe. If Spence wants to, I think he can stop him late. If Mike, it all comes down to, yes, Mikey's chin to enter the real part of the fight, but Mikey's power to determine if he can go the distance. If Mikey has real power at welterweight, I think he can get to the finish line and lose a respectful decision and a good fight, but Spence is your man. But if Mikey cannot move Spence, and if Spence's dog on the inside is as loud and real as it seems like, because when you see Spence, Rafe, there's a gangster in there. There's a real man in there. Boxing is a hood sport. There's a hood legend in there, Rafe. And that hood legend can stop Mikey Garcia if he wants to. My prediction, Rafe, is that the size of Mikey's balls against the size of Errol Spence's grit are going to collide and it'll be magical.
The Big Bang.
The Big Bang Theory. I think Mikey gets there. I think Mikey gets to the finish line. He gets off the deck. He gets to the finish line. He loses a respectable 16-12, 17-11 across the board. But you're going to give Mikey, everyone's going to win here. I don't know if the pay-per-view number is going to win. Mikey's going to win and defeat. Spence is going to prove that he is that guy. And Spence is going to go on to be the number one guy in the whole sport.
Wow. Well, that's a lot to respond to there, Brian. First of all, back to that face-to-face episode right after Errol Spence was talking about that grit, that dog in him. I loved how Mikey responded when he said, I'm X-rated and he's not. the moment I thought you were going to talk about was when Mikey, I think, did respond and he said, I know I'm better. He's good at everything. I'm a little bit better at everything. And Errol kind of flipped it on him and said, yeah, I see you being humble right now, but I also watch all the stuff you've been saying when I'm not around, when you're not sitting across the table from me, when you're not trying to be polite for our esteemed host, Brian Campbell. I see how you talk when you're talking to Ellie Sekpak in the gym or whoever is videoing you that day, and you're talking real big. And I remember that. I watch everything. And they just left it at that. And we're going to see if he can actually make Mikey pay for some of the stuff he's been saying when he's not in mixed company. Look, who cares about whose hood is tougher? This is a sport and it's who is better in the ring and who's going to win a fight. I think while I love the idea of talking myself into Mikey is the better fighter, he will figure out a way to win and expose over 12 rounds a guy who just isn't quite on that level of skill and boxing talent and brilliance. I don't think that's not how I see the fight playing out. I get really excited imagining how it could happen, and it could happen. It's not off the table, but I can't responsibly imagine that's the way, envision the fight playing out that way. I think Errol Spence is nearly as good, if not as good, and he's bigger. He's one of the biggest welterweights out there, period. He's overwhelmed Kell Brook, who was already one of the biggest welterweights out there. There doesn't really seem to be, even though Errol Spence gets hit, we've never seen him hurt. We've never seen him struggle. And that's what the other amazing thing. We've never seen Mikey struggle either. See how he responds once he gets hurt early, if it happens. Wow.
We only saw when Salido hurt him with his headbutt.
He wasn't even hurt. Mikey wasn't even hurt in that. Robert just pulled the plug because he was ahead.
You know, making me want to change my prediction.
Do not come at me, you Salido people. I know you nuts are out there being like, Salido, what's coming on? No.
Rafe, you make me want to change my prediction there because I'm trying to put extra stock in Mikey's balls are so big that he can get to that finish line. But that would make me have to believe that Errol isn't everything I really think he is. Rafe, I'm going to interrupt your prediction to alter mine and say I can't responsibly say Garcia is going to go the distance if I believe that Errol is that dog on the inside. He's not going to let him go the distance. He's going to finish him, Rafe, in the 10th round. Book it. TKO 10. I'm sorry. I had to cut you off to cut myself off to cut me. Cut me, Mick. There it is. TKO 10, Errol Spence. You're going to see that in print. You're going to hear me on all the waves, media waves, telling people, what's your prick?
That's fine, Brian. I appreciate you coming and getting this party back on track. And that's exactly where I was headed. I think that the most likely outcome is Errol Spence is good enough to win this fight over a guy who may be a better technician overall. He may be a historic technician in the 135 weight division against Vasily Lomachenko someday. Just if Mikey Garcia loses this fight, I won't lose any regard for him as a fighter. In fact, I'll have lots of respect for what he tried to accomplish, and I do think he'll show us some things. He will make Errol Spence look bad in a few moments, which I don't think we've really seen. But no, Errol Spence is going to catch up with him, and he's going to work the body, and he's going to break him down the way he's done to a lot of good fighters already, and the way that I think the tell here is the Lipinets fight. If Mikey had to work that hard against a decent 140-pounder, then as much as we want to believe in his greatness and as cool as it is to see him believe in it even more than any of us do, it's just you can't make that leap. That doesn't compute. If you struggled in that way against a smaller, lesser version, it's disrespectful to even call Lipinets a version of Errol Spence. It ain't going to happen. It's a late stoppage for me.
Cherry will be popped.
And he's popping cherries, taking away unbeaten records.
Exactly. Co-main event, David Benavidez coming back from drugs, super middleweight against Jaylion Love, 10 rounds. I don't hate this fight. I mean, it's a setup for Benavidez to get back in the title picture, to finally face Caleb Plant. Jaylion Love, now the official Mayweather Promotions B-side for anybody that needs to get well, fresh off the Peter Quillen loss.
I do hope that the broadcast introduces David Benavidez the same way. Like, David Benavidez coming back from drugs in this one. I don't mind it because Benavidez is fun, right? And he's not, he's a guy who's going to go out and probably finish Jaylion Love, and make it a fun fight. So it would be a groaner if it were our guy Anthony Durrell in there and we knew it was going to go a full 10 rounds and we're just gonna be like, oh, kill me now.
We were talking about all those PBC guys getting meetings with DAZN people privately, some getting it with Skipper. Do you think Benavidez was actually meeting with Skipper and that's the reason why he got popped?
Oh, how dare you? What are you talking? What are you even insinuating?
Oscar is a freak. Yeah. Hey, Luis Neri against McJoe Arroyo, 10 rounds bantamweights. Do you care on this pay-per-view undercard?
Sure. I mean, I want to see what Luis Neri is like when he's off the clenbuterol and whatever else he was mixing in the punch out there when he's beating the crap out of Shinsuke and
Nakamura.
I forgot. Whatever. Shinsuke.
Hey, we got to speed up here. Chris Areola against Jean-Pierre Augustin, 10 rounds heavyweight.
Yamanaka, I got it.
I like him extra sloppy. That's something to watch, maybe. So is Prince Charles Martin against Gregory Corbin, 10 rounds heavyweight. Why don't you just match Charles Martin against Chris Areola and make it like the pay-per-view opener? Wouldn't that solve a lot of things?
It might. Give me some Kownatsky in here.
Yeah. Wow, there's like 18 fights on this pay-per-view card. That's going to start at 10 a.m. Dallas time. So that's it, Rafe, because I don't think you care about the rest of these until we get to Sunday night. I'm sorry, Saturday in Japan, it's Kosei Tanaka versus Ryochi Taguchi, 12 rounds for Tanaka's WBO flyweight title. Do you care about that one?
Well, I do, because as Frank Duke said in Bloodsport, Tanaka is my Shidoshi too.
All right. Well, wow. We are running late and it's my fault, but Sunday, I said Saturday earlier, I was wrong. It's Sunday, St. Patrick's Day, Sunday night, New York City, MSG Theater, ESPN Plus, Michael McConlin, 10 rounds featherweights against Ruben Garcia Hernandez. Whether or not you care, you're going to hear from Conlin now, Rafe. Get ready, back up the truck. It's time. Enjoy. Live from London, one of the hottest rising stars in boxing and in the top-ranked stable, Michael McConlin, the featherweight, unbeaten. Bro, great to get a chance to talk to you again. How's everything?
All good, Bram. All good. Just after a good flying session, so feeling good, mate. Feeling good.
Getting fired up for your return. St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. You can see that on ESPN Plus. When Michael Conlin comes back to face Ruben Garcia Hernandez. Hey, Mick, we got a trend going here. 3 years in a row, you at the theater at Madison Square Garden, headlining shows on St. Patrick's Day. This is becoming a business, a must-see event.
A tradition, just like St. Patrick's Day is a tradition. The Mick Conlin fight St. Patrick's Day weekend is always going to be a tradition now, I'm blessed and very grateful to have the opportunity to be able to compete in such a famous arena, the Mecca of boxing, every national holiday of my home country. So, you know, it's fantastic, and I'm very honored.
I got to ask you about the electricity, about the feeling, because here's the deal. Us boxing fans and journalists in the States, we watch what's going on across the pond, whether it be England, Ireland, wherever. When there's a big fight, you can feel you can get the feels through the TV screen. There's something going on over there that we don't get to have in the States. Yeah. We don't get to have that juice. But when you fill that Garden Theater, I feel like you're getting a taste of that. What is that like when you come out and all the Irish fans are there in New York going nuts on St. Patrick's Day? What's that feeling like?
It's something which is very, very hard to describe. And I've done it now 2 years running, and each time I've done it, it's been the exact same. The hair stand up my neck, my back, everywhere around my body. It's walking out to a cauldron of support and love for me. So I'm just filled with excitement and absolute gratefulness when I see it. It's unbelievable, and I do know what you're talking about when compared to the US fights compared to the Irish/UK fights. The atmosphere and the support of the general public who come out and support them is completely different. And I think I do bring that element of support and excitement to the US shore. So it's the Irishness in me and the Irishness in my support. So I'm very grateful for all my Irish following who do follow me everywhere around the world.
You made a big splash in doing the St. Patrick's Day thing 2 years ago for your pro debut. You had your good buddy Conor McGregor, the fellow Irish star UFC champion, walk you out. But he almost kind of stole your thunder getting in the media's face, hyping up what became that crossover fight with Floyd Mayweather. I always wondered, because I haven't talked to you since then, was there any part of you that was like, hey, Conor, I get what you're doing here, but this is my night, brother?
Nah, you know what? There's none of that, because obviously that means I had a big part in making, you know, the richest fight in history, because it was my debut, which he kind of put out the statement that he beats Floyd Mayweather and he is boxing and stuff. So no, you know what? I think it added to the whole event, and you know, it made last in people's memories an awful lot more. Obviously, the people in USC and other sports and stuff, they remember a lot of it for the Conor thing. But for me and for anybody who knows me, will always remember for being my debut and having Conor along, helping support it. And he did. He brought an extra bit of, you know, atmosphere to the whole event.
No question about it. Now, you're 10 fights into your pro career, 10-0, 6 knockouts, couple years in, how has that adjustment been for you from the amateur to the pros? What have you learned? How comfortable are you now at this point, 10 fights in?
Yeah, I feel I've learned an awful lot. I feel, in fairness, my bouts have been very good learning bouts. I've learned from each one of them something different every time. And, you know, it's making me a more complete fighter. I feel I'm on the right upward trajectory. And, you know, I'm feeling great. I've learned an awful lot. I've settled into the pro game very well. And, you know, I'm looking forward to going for the big performance on March 17th.
Have you adopted a nickname yet on the pro level? I was trying to look it up. I didn't see anything. What does that matter? What do we call you? You're Michael Conlon. You're Mick Conlon. Is there anything else? The Irish assassin? What do we got here?
You know what? I always say I'm never going to name myself. If someone comes up with a nickname and I like it and it sticks. But I'm not the type of guy who's going to share their nicknames and call myself this and call myself that. If people want to just call me Mick, they can call me Mick. If they want to call me Michael, they can call me Michael. But if someone comes along with a good nickname, like the Irish Assassin or something, and it starts to stick with people, you know, I don't mind. But for me, it doesn't really mean anything. You know, the kind of nickname and slogan I like best is the Conlon Revolution. And I think that'll stick well.
I'm definitely down with that. Now, when you turn pro and another top-ranked prospect, Shakur Stevenson, turned pro, you know, everybody asked the both of you, I feel like there's a slow play here for one day, a big showdown. And, you know, you guys had the right comments. Yeah, we'll see each other down the road. How much are you watching what Shakur is doing, rising at sort of the same pace and level as you, with that idea in mind that one day you may face each other? Do you compare notes? Do you check out his fights and go, okay, I'm a little bit ahead of him at this point? What's that relationship like?
I watch everybody. I watch Shakur. I watch Open Champions. And, you know, I know one day we will face each other. So, you know, I am taking the notes and seeing little things I can, you know, I can expose when we do face each other. But, you know, he's on a great ride at the minute. He's putting in great performances. And he's doing very, very well. So, you know, I've been impressed with him, and I'm really looking forward to the time when we do face each other.
Excellent. Indeed. Now, you're from Belfast. When I think of Belfast in boxing, I think of the great Belfast boy, Carl Frampton. You're on a pace to build your name to that level. What's your relationship been like with him in your growth as a fighter? Is there a relationship? Is there friendship, mentorship, anything?
Yeah, there's friendship, and we're with the same management team. We're both from different parts of Belfast, you know, opposite sides, but you know, I feel if we were ever to face each other, it wouldn't be good for our city, because it would probably cause an awful lot of conflict. But you know, I'm very friendly with Carly, very friendly with me, very supportive of my career as I am with his. So you know, I can't see it happening. So I don't think it'll happen. We're very good friends.
We, of course, remember and loved you from the Olympics, the personality that you showed dealing with a tough defeat, rough judging. You put the middle fingers up there. You showed your heart and who you are, and it was marketable. It was fun. Then we saw Bob Arum when he signed you, putting out middle fingers. Bob Arum's a wild dude for, what is he, 87. I had him on this show last year, and he's talking about, you know, the secret to staying old is smoking weed. And I'm like, whoa, Bob, you're wild. Yeah. You ever get to hang out with this guy? You can throw down a few pints. What's it like hanging out with the Bob father?
Listen, Bob is one of the coolest characters in boxing, probably the coolest. You know, he's old. He does not give a fiddler's about anything. You know, he will say whatever's on his mind. And I think that's why we kind of clicked, because he knows that if there's a wrongdoing and I don't agree with it, I'll speak my mind. And I think he liked that about me. And, you know, we clicked right away. I have a great relationship with Bob as my promoter, and you know, as the head of Top Rank Boxing. He's fantastic. I love everything he does. I love everything he says. I remember my second bout that we were boxing in Chicago, and you know, the main paper is there, did an interview with me and Bob together, and Bob just comes out of the blue and starts saying he hates Chicago and shit, and I'm like, what are you saying this for, Bob? You can't be saying that. You know, I'm boxing here tomorrow evening. He said, no, I don't like it. They don't appreciate boxing and all this. So it was very funny. But, you know, it's just like the guy, he's 87 years of age, and he doesn't give a shit about what anybody thinks and what anybody occurs of what he says. He only occurs with whatever he says himself.
I know. It's been a great turnaround. I think 10, 15 years ago, a lot of fans were like, we respect Bob, but, you know, he's a promoter. He lies. He's a salesman. Now I think people are like, man, I want to hang out with this guy. It's been great PR work just by being himself. But how have you done with dealing with celebrity? Because, you know, you were well known in the Olympics. You're making a quick rise as a pro. We're really excited to see you. What's it like when you're in London or you're in Northern Ireland and people recognize you right away, I would assume? How tough is that to deal with?
It's not too bad, you know, because I kind of had a slow burner into the kind of celebrity of late state of it, so to say, you know, as being so successful in the amateurs in Ireland. I was on, you know, TV a lot and doing an awful lot, I think, since 2012. So it's been building slowly and slowly. It is a lot more now, but you know, it's not too bad. Sometimes if you try to have an aid or something, it can be tough because people are pulling you left, right, and center for photos. But you know, it comes with the territory and it's part of the job. And even as a professional, you know, after my fight in New York, you know, there's after parties and stuff, and I just got to go and show my face. There's no point in me going and getting wild or anything because, you know, you can't really, because you're just getting pictures the whole time and greeting people and meeting people and, you know, just being socializing with all the fans and my friends and family and stuff. So it's tough, but it's no problem. It comes with the territory, and as they say, and I'm used to it kind of already. So, you know, it's just how to maintain it and how to control it for yourself.
Indeed. Yeah, no question. Now, big boxing household you came from, considering older brother Jamie, the Mexican super flyweight fighter. When was the point that these two brothers in the same house said to each other, we're going to become pro fighters? When did that happen? When did that click? Was there a lot of infighting growing up between you?
You know, my older brother Jamie, and then I have a brother in between me and Jamie called Brendan. And they started boxing around 11, 12, and I was probably around 7. And I just said, I wanted to do what they were doing. I wanted to be like my older brothers. And I followed them to the gym. I ended up started boxing 7 years of age. And I always looked up to Jamie. He was always the oldest. He's the oldest in the house, and he was always the one who was doing really well in the boxing. And if Jamie had to quit at some stage, I probably would have quit because I just wanted to be like him. But he kept going and was doing really well. And I think it came to around, it was 2009. I was always kind of good from underage and I was winning an awful lot, but we were due to face each other in like provincial finals. And he says, listen, you can take the title and I'll go professional. And he went professional in, and I'm going on and succeeding. So doing all the Olympics and the world championships and stuff and doing so well. So I just said, I knew that was, once I started to do so well internationally as an amateur, I knew that was the time that I had the ability, I could make this my living. And I knew from a young age I was going to do it as a job, but when I was succeeding so well in international boxing in the amateurs, I knew that, you know, this is definitely the route I was going to take, professional boxing. I'm good at it, I could make some money doing it, so let's do it.
That's a cool story. I like that. Now, do you compare? Here's what I bring this up. I was talking to Mikey Garcia. Of course, he's going to fight Errol Spence in a big pay-per-view fight coming up. And Mikey's so calm and cool and not worried when talking about boxing. Like, everybody's like, hey, Spence is bigger than you. He's going to blow you out. Mikey's like, yeah, it's fine. I believe in myself. And I think a lot of that is he was the younger brother in this boxing world that he grew up in, where it's just natural. Yeah. You being the younger brother of two boxers, did it come more natural, where there was less fear growing up? Like, yeah, I can do this. I've watched my brothers do it. It's not an issue.
I think so, and you know, I think it shows in how both of us compete. You know, Jamie, his nickname is the Mexican because he just likes to get in and go to war, whereas when I was the younger brother, where my father kind of honed in more of the skills and the boxing ability, kind of, instead of just using the harder balls and the toughness, that just go to war. But I was always, I always had that more relaxedness, the better kind of skill set, because I was kind of taught it from a younger age and it was a lot more natural and comfortable to me. So I think that was the difference. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying.
Excellent. Now, look, March 17th, we'll see you. Ruben Garcia Hernandez is the opponent. 24-3, two draws, veteran. What are you, kind of fight are you expecting here?
Listen, it's going to be a tricky enough fight. He's a smart, tough Mexican. He knows how to survive and knows how to navigate himself through the distance. But at the same time, like, he competes and he has a good engine where he's able to go for the full 10 rounds at a good pace. You know, I think he has 10 knockouts, so, you know, he carries a little bit of power. I'm expecting him to come out and if you give him confidence, he'll start to grow in the fight and do well. But I'll go out, I'll snatch his confidence right away. And, you know, if the opportunity arises where I can take him out, I'll be able to take him out. But at the same time, I'll be prepared to go the distance and use complete boxing skills to dominate him.
Now, I'm interested how quickly you think it's going to be before you enter the title picture. Now, Top Rank, you got to give the credit. Historically, the matchmakers, they know what they're doing. They're the timeline works. They get guys, the type of opponents they need. When it's ready, it's ready. But you're also seeing guys like Lomachenko these days, Usyk, a lot of these European fighters coming in. They're saying they're bucking the trend. They're saying, I want to fight for titles earlier. I don't care. I'm ready. How ready do you feel? How far away are you for that big leap?
I feel good, you know. I feel, you know, I'm looking St. Patrick's Day next year. I think that would be fantastic. I think, you know, for me, that's when I would love it to happen, in the garden, in the big room, St. Patrick's Day next year. That's when I would love to play for the title.
That's a heck of a goal to look forward to. Can't wait. Can't wait. March 17th, the theater, MSG, ESPN+. Michael Conlan is back. Irish fans galore will be going nuts. We look forward to seeing it. Mick, great chatting with you, brother. Best of luck on your rise. Things are going great. Keep it up, man.
Thank you. Thanks, Brandon. And take care, my friend. I'll speak to you soon.
All right. Special thanks to Mick Conlan. I like this kid. I like this kid a lot, Rafe. I like him talking about hanging out with the wild man, Uncle Bob, Grandpa there, Bob Arum. I'm not saying he sparked up with him. I'm saying it's wild times hanging out with Grandpa. But
hello, Grandpa.
Are you in yet on Conlan in terms of, like, okay, I got to watch no matter what? Or, I mean, will you be there with the bagpipe?
No, I'm not in on that level. And unfortunately, I won't be there to witness this in person. I don't feel like I need to watch Conlan no matter who he's fighting. I am curious to see where he goes and if he is – legit, you know, he's one of these prospects that has looked great, decent, but not always that impressive, I think. And I want to see when he starts to step up, where he can go.
All right. The co-main event is interesting, Rafe. It's a welterweight bout. 37-year-old Luis Collazo against Samuel Vargas. This is the two scoop Samuel Vargas, right? Is this a rematch or is this that, or is this the Samuel Vargas who
Samuel Vargas.
All right. So I just played myself there. So 37-year-old Luis Collazo gave Sammy Two Scoops or the Mexican Toucan, whatever his name was, Vasquez's first defeat.
The can do.
Yes. Yes. By KO. This is Samuel Vargas, the guy who Danny Garcia sent to hell. All right. I'm less enthused. You don't care, right?
I'm the same level of enthused. Good for Luis Collazo. He's still fighting.
All right. That's the show for this week. Special thanks to Paulie Malignaggi and Michael Mick Conlan for stopping by. Special thanks to Rafe Bugs for getting up when it was still dark and the curtains behind him. I saw that, Rafe. I saw you getting up at the ass crack of dawn because you need to give the people what they are waiting for.
Let's talk about a fight that blew up in my face.
Oh, that's gross. That's gross.
It blew up on me. I got spanked. Let me wipe the egg from my face.
Wow. Wow. Sometimes, Rafe, you tease that bag, you play with it, you get the mess. Follow him at Rafe Bugs. Buy all of his books. And hey, guys, enjoy Spence Garcia on Fox Pay-Per-View. This should be something wild. Rafe, please take us out of here. Messages for the people. Sell something. What do you got?
How about this? We out.